I call the meeting to order. Let the record show that all board members are present. Mr. Crawford, can you please lead us in the pledge?
It'd be my privilege. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for a majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press *6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting, and that an announcement on your phone will let you know when that happens. Thank you. There is no action to announce in closed session. Comments from board members. Trustee Davis.
Yes, good evening. I just have wanted to compliment the district on all it's trying to do with the COVID bearing down on everybody. The plan looks very thorough. And it's been through a lot of review, and I think there's been a lot of good dialogue in that. I really want to express my appreciation to all those teachers and principals and the staff for holding it together and helping our students do the best they can with getting their education during this tough time. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Boone.
I had no comment.
Trustee Allison.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say thank you to the staffs and all the work that they're doing doing the distance learning. And I don't think it's going as well as it should go, but it's doing a lot better than it could go. The one thing I wish in the negotiations, I wish the district – seems like the district doesn't listen as much as I would like them to what the teachers are saying. And I just really sometimes wish I knew what was really going on, because sometimes I don't hear everything from the district and everything from the teachers that, you know, maybe I need to get more involved in being in some of the meetings, watching the meetings, if that's possible. But anyways, I think the district is fantastic, and I think we're going a long ways. And I think, Mr. Carrion, always, you are fantastic, and I love all the members on the board, and I'm glad to see that my computer, the bandwidth here is fast enough today that I can see you guys, and you might lose me. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Flurry.
Yes, good evening. I would also like to echo the other two trustees on the how hard the people are working to put things in place. It's very difficult. There's a different heavy load on everyone. And also I appreciate many calls from the teachers that have expressed their concerns. And I've answered everyone, listened to them. And I do appreciate getting all different viewpoints. And it's good to know that there's just so many different viewpoints. And it's when we make the final decision, it's going to be tough, but it's good to get input from our constituents and especially our teachers. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Trustee Scott.
Yes, good evening. I would just like to comment to say I thank the teachers for their hard work and dedication as always. I don't ever want them to think that we've forgotten them by any means. I've received many positive emails from many teachers, just very, very still excited about the direction that they're going, and they're working things out and feeling pretty comfortable where they are. And I've also received other ones that are not. But I just want us to continue to work toward the goal, and soon things will be back at a stage of the game that we can all try to get the kids through the program, through our school program and school year safely. And I'm so glad that for those of us that have considered the safety issue, one of the top priorities, I hope it continues to work out for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. Trustee Crawford.
Yes, I just would really like to reach out to all the teachers that have embraced distance learning and different aspects. I'll be totally honest with you, with more than 40 years with the district, 36 years teaching high school, I my hat's off to you. I honestly, I don't think I could do the distance learning the way you are. I'm not technology sound, and I'm just really, really impressed with all the things you're doing, teachers out there. And yeah, I would have never even assumed it. It's such a divided group, and I've never seen it like this. Two-thirds of our parents want the kids back. I can see their side of it. Some teachers are apprehensive, and I can definitely see their side of it. I hope we can accommodate you all, because I empathize with all you're going through. And once again, I'll echo, I'm proud of you for that, hanging in with this distance learning, because it's really great to me. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crawford. So I do have a couple of comments tonight that I would like to make. First of all, I would like to thank all the parents that took the opportunity to complete the survey and submit questions regarding the elementary school waiver. I also want to thank staff for their time and effort in answering the 66 questions and presenting the answers in the 1 hour, 54-minute YouTube presentation on October 1. There have been over 1,000 views of this presentation. What I found most intriguing with regard to that presentation was that a majority of the answers also contain references to the pages of the district's proposed pandemic reopening plan. What it tells me is that the district's plan is very comprehensive and well thought out. I would again like to thank all of the MJUSD staff for their dedication to our students and families during these times. I do have a concern, and that concern is the toll that the requirements set forth by the state is having on many members within our district. The countless hours our teachers are putting in to educate our students and my grandchildren. The countless hours that the superintendent, the cabinet, the management team, the principals are putting in to make sense of these requirements and the implementation of these requirements. I want to expand a little on my concern for our teachers. I feel many of them are at their breaking point, providing the best education for our students. They are learning new programs in a short amount of time. Google Classroom, AIRS, Zoom, we all know how well this is working for us, even. To mention only a few, and hoping that all of these work when delivering the curriculum to the students. Teachers are updating the student portal, which has all the daily and weekly assignments, the parent portal, the intervention groups that they support, the student portfolios to share student work, tutorial videos to help students navigate the website, the student recognition page to make students feel connected still while we're away from school. What I would feel that would be helpful for me is to have a workshop that would demonstrate what our teachers are being asked to do to educate our students. Is there a way that we could be walked through a typical week, a typical day of a teacher at the elementary level and at the secondary level? This would give me a greater understanding of what we are asking them to do. Looking at many of the web pages that I see on school websites, some of the web pages or the teacher web pages are very detailed. Then we have some teacher sites on their web page that only has a picture in their name. So that is concerning to me. But I would think to see if we could have a workshop that board members could understand really what we're asking these teachers to do would be very helpful to me. Thank you. opportunity, excuse me, for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association. Angela?
Good evening, Mr. Rasmussen and school board and all of you that are present in some way, shape, or form here. This evening, the Marysville Unified Teachers Association, we are going to be providing our comments actually from two of us. And so I am actually going to let one of my bargaining team members, Tammy Stralzini, start us off, and then I'm going to end things when she is done. Thank you.
Go ahead, Tammy.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Tammy Strolzini, and I teach sixth grade at Arboga Elementary School. I've been in education for just shy of 30 years now, and over the years, I've become an active, proud member of our teachers' union. I recently became a member of MUTA's bargaining team, thinking that I could be a voice for my colleagues, do my part to protect teachers, improve their working conditions, and fight for a fair salary. Never in my wildest dreams did I think I'd be fighting to keep our teachers safe in the face of a pandemic, nor did I think I would be in a battle over working conditions, or more aptly put, over working conditions. I'm here to speak to you about Mr. Cena's most recent Friday bombshell, because what's better than a teacher coming off a 60-plus hour work week than to read yet another upheaval from the superintendent? Specifically, I want to address the way our team was misrepresented and mischaracterized in the MJUSD waiver application. In order to have a waiver approved, there needs to be evidence of consultation with all labor groups. The section regarding the consultation with teachers looks more like a blame game. When I read this statement, I was infuriated. It painted a picture of the MUTA team being non-responsive and uncooperative when it came time to confer regarding the waiver. The district claims that they reached out on September 17th when the waiver was first announced to all labor groups, and again September 25th, asking us to bargain impacts and effects of this waiver application, and received no response from us until September 30th. What this does not include is any mention of the over half a dozen emails and over a dozen text messages between the personnel director and the MUTA president, where a more clear request could have been made rather than the initial vague invitation where the district expressed they were eager to engage, elaborate, and develop the waiver reopening plan. They also don't relay the fact that on Wednesday, September 3rd, we spent the afternoon meeting and conferring over the issue of special ed one-on-one meetings with no sense of urgency to talk at all about the waiver. It was not until the Friday, September 25th email that a clear request to schedule a session to bargain impacts and effects was made. This request was initially responded to that following Monday, and a meeting was arranged by Tuesday the 29th. There are four of us, including one special ed teacher, who are not only expected by the district to drop everything to consult, but to also put in our new normal workday of 8 to 10 hours at least, where in the past we would have been allowed a substitute in order to go to the bargaining table. Unfortunately, in this climate, no such luxury exists. We met with the district on the soonest possible date our calendars would allow, Friday, October 2nd. The lack of communication is the biggest roadblock of this entire situation. Too many times, beginning in June, we offered input, suggestions, and more importantly, corrections to the reopening plan that was full of errors and inconsistencies. And yes, our biggest hurdle to overcome is that of safety protocols of the reopening plan. We are allowed to bargain for more stringent protocols, and we are well within our rights to insist on conditions that will ensure our safety. We understand that the additional parts of our return to campus are also very important, but what can be more vital than securing the safety of our teachers and our students? I think the most frustrating part of this entire process is that we have a superintendent that only graced us with his presence once, a personnel director who has previously been the only person we negotiated with, who has been provided with little to no answer, and who really tries to relay our concerns and get answers, but those answers seldom materialize, gets lost in translation, or just leads to more questions. And finally, an overpaid lawyer who we're told must be there because all districts our size have lawyers at the bargaining table. But it hasn't been until Mr. Cena took office that I remember ever even seeing Mr. Gant, who seems to be the puppet master running this entire show and is the main cause of most of our stalemate. This bargaining team has worked diligently and nonstop since June, trying to impress upon the district the overall hopes and needs of its members to return to an in-person learning experience, whether through the waiver or through tier movement, where teachers feel safe and are not driven to the brink of either exhaustion or insanity. Thank you. Angela.
Thank you, Angela.
In going through the waiver application that we were recently given, the revised, it includes a section in regards to the consultation with labor organizations. And in particular, it provides some information on the consultation with MUTA, and which Tammy was just referring to. And the issues with the diatribe that is listed there are so extensive that I can't even begin to go into all of them. But I will mention at least a few items. For one, it's mentioned, a number of dates were mentioned that we had bargained on the reopening and the waiver. A number of those dates were clear back from May and June. It is impossible for us to have met and bargained on the reopening plan before July 7th, since the plan didn't even exist before that date. It is also impossible for us to have met and bargained on the reopening plan and the waiver before July 17th, because the waiver process didn't even exist before July 17th. Were we bargaining on those dates? Some of those dates we did bargain. Initially, though, the May 28th date that's listed was supposed to just be an open dialogue for us to come together and actually just have a very open, frank, free conversation. And so I don't understand the listing of those dates. And like I said, the list just goes on and on. But the district reserved their most blatant attacks and fabrications and falsehoods for their depictions of MUTA's stance regarding face coverings and social distancing. We do believe that all students should wear face coverings, either masks or shields, for TK through 12. We've had those conversations at the table, and I have made those remarks here, and teachers have made those remarks repeatedly throughout the district. However, we have had some differences of opinions here, because what's put in the plan really completely misrepresents our stance. You know, like I said, we do believe that all TK through 12th grade students should wear face coverings in our classrooms. However, we have never said at all times, as is, you know, bold underlined in the plan. We have not said that we want TK through second grade students excluded from learning for not wearing masks, which is also included in the consultation. We did propose language that students could be escorted to site admin for individual support and instruction. Since we still do not have a student non-compliance policy from the district, and since the CDPH doesn't provide much in the way of guidance that would help teachers in that situation in their classrooms. But we never said that the student wasn't to return. It was simply meant as a way to provide another avenue of support for teachers and students. And we have not asked for a guarantee, as is stated in the waiver application. We have not asked for a guarantee of 6 feet distancing between student desks in all circumstances. But with all of this being said, MUTA did recently put forth a proposal in which we agreed to the district's language regarding student face coverings and distancing of student desks. After really doing some soul searching, we decided that we would put forth a proposal in which we could agree with the district's language as they had it. However, we had asked for three-sided plexiglass barriers for all teacher desks or workstations, since some teach from podiums quite frequently, and for student desks or workstations, since we do have a number of students that are at tables. Before we even submitted our proposal to the district, though, at the table, we had priced out that proposal. In looking at two three-sided plexiglass barriers for teachers on the average, and one for every student in the district. Keeping in mind that on the hybrid, we're only supposed to have half of our kids there anyway. We priced it out for every kid. It was going to be approximately $200,000 for our proposal. And we gave that to the district. And the district, within a very short time, under half an hour, returned and said no. And not no, but let's work something else out, just no. We were told that it was the expense and the availability. We had already looked online. There was a possibility the district may have had to go with two or three suppliers, but that could happen. We have a purchasing department that does amazing work and has been doing amazing work. Three suppliers for the number of plexiglass shields we were talking about doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility. But we were just told no for a $200,000 proposal to come to an agreement on an issue that has been of monumental importance and loggerheads for months didn't seem like a whole lot. And especially when you're talking about health and safety of people, our students and our teachers and our staff members. And especially when you consider that this district received $14.9 million in CARES Act money. And I know we've had a lot to do with it, but $14.9 in CARES Act money, $14.9 million. And even if the CARES Act money is not an avenue for that, we've also learned in the district's unaudited actuals that in 2019-2020, the district saved $1.5 million on certificated salaries. There's $200,000 within that, I'm sure. And I understand that we're going to be talking about what pots of money you can take things out of, but when you saved $1.5 million on certificated salaries on teachers, and we're asking for $200,000 for plexiglass three-sided, not single-sided, but three-sided plexiglass barriers, we made an attempt. We made an offer. We came more than halfway. I find it disturbing that all of these facts completely escaped the district's attention in their description of our consultation efforts. And I find it particularly disturbing because it seems like a not so veiled attempt, an actual very blatant attempt at completely vilifying teachers in this district, your teachers. You just spent some time singing the praises of teachers here. There's approximately 45 of us on here. And I would imagine maybe a few dozen more on YouTube Live. But after the very public flogging that the district inflicted upon us in their email to the entire district, every employee, every parent received this document, I would think maybe now the board, if you really truly do believe the words you were just saying, then I think maybe you could have the district either issue an apology to the teachers, or at the very least, you could have them put out some factual, truthful information in regards to this consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Operating Engineers, Local Union Number 3. California School Employee Association, Number 346 and 648.
Hello, this is Felix.
Who is that?
Yes, this is Felix with the Opera Engineers.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Yes, Board, my name is Felix Mario Huerta, Jr. I'm the new Opera Engineer business agent assigned to Marysville, and I wanted to introduce myself. I have met the district superintendent. I've met the HR representative as well. And I just wanted to let you know that it's my intention to speak to each and every one of you over the course of the next month or so and personally introduce myself and get to know each and every one of you. I've heard very good things from the membership with regard to the district. And so I'm just here to introduce myself today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we have the Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, President Rasmussen. So a few things from AMAs tonight. First, Educational Services launched a new website of support materials for all of our different employee groups, and we're still continuing to build it. But one of the first things that we activated there was MJUSD helper recognition page. And so it starts with a quote from one of my favorite Mr. Rogers, and it said basically, "When I was a boy, I would see scary things in the news, and my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find the people who are helping.'" And so tonight we want to acknowledge people from each classification. So we have a $10 gift card to Starbucks for each of these people. And so just real briefly, the first one from the admin ranks was Troy Hain, who was nominated by Brandy Clough. She nominated him because he has helped her so much with all the different technology and curriculums and spent a lot of extra time. So congratulations to Troy, and thank you to Brandy for taking the time. The next two from the teaching ranks, we have Miranda Hartridge and Mindy Goodson at Edgewater. And Troy, by the way, was at McKinney. So these two teachers out at Edgewater were nominated by a substitute teacher there, Mr. Jordan Gorman, LHS graduate. And he says, as a long-term substitute, it's been very challenging for him, but these two have taken so much time to help support him so that he can do the best, and he just wanted to thank them. So congratulations to Miranda and Mindy, and thank you, Jordan, for taking the time. And then next up, we have a paraeducator, Laura Lowry at Kynoch, who was nominated by teacher Molly McKay, who just says that she's so blessed to have her. She brings experience, and she brings cheerful demeanor and helps in any way that's needed for the students or the teacher. So thank you to Molly for nominating, and Laura, congratulations. And then finally from AMACE, I want to say just one last thing, and this is kind of a personal statement. I care very much about the teachers in this district. I'm married to one of them. I have lots of friends there. I care very much about the administrators in this district who put a lot of time into everything they do. But I'm going to be honest, I didn't come here for any of them. I came here for the kids. And I hear a lot of talk about what our needs are and health and safety, and these are all important things. But I go out and do home visits, and I've seen some of the things that are going on in the houses. I've seen what it's doing to kids. And I just want to remind everybody, for the families and the kids who may not show up to speak here tonight, that there are a lot of people that are struggling through this situation. I know everybody is doing their very, very best. And I truly believe everybody is trying their very, very best to make this work. It's an impossible situation, but I just want to remind everybody and keep the kids at the forethought of what we're doing as we move forward. Thank you for the time to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Greco. The supervisory unit. Next, we have public comment. Note, for teleconference meetings, please submit your public comment card located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting, given to the secretary, board president, or the superintendent. The public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda, or ask that they be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker. 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. So tonight we do have several public comments. We actually have 14 that have been submitted regarding some type of school reopening plan. What we'll do tonight, as we've done in the past, we will take as many of those items that we can. That would, again, having a 3 minute maximum time limit, and then having a total time limit of 20 minutes for this particular topic. Then we have five other public comment cards that have various different types of topics that we'll cover after we do this one. So if tonight we do not have time to get to your public comment, we will keep these public comments, and then you will be first to speak at the next scheduled board meeting. I would like to remind you that you do have 3 minutes for your talking period. And at the end of those 3 minutes, we will ask you to stop. And if you decide not to stop, then we will mute you. So thank you very much. Our first is Nicole Verculli. Nicole Verculli. Sorry for the pronunciation of your name.
Close. My name's Nicole Verkyle. The kids all get it confused too, so no worries. My name is Nicole Verkyle. I teach at Arboga Elementary School. I wanted to address my concern of safety in my classroom. I have 33 students on my roster, split that in half for the two cohorts, and I will have 16 plus myself on Tuesday and Wednesday, and 17 students plus myself on Thursday and Friday. That is more than what is allowed for social distancing in an enclosed space. I also wanted to address my concern of being an in-class teacher as well as a distance learning teacher. I like to provide my students with videos of my lessons, and I have no clue when I'm going to find the time to record videos if I'm teaching face-to-face in the morning and still have to check in with the students who are distance learning in the afternoons. Teachers are already working an average of 10 to 12 hours per day. This is now going to be taking time away from my family because I will have to record videos in the evenings. I think you're asking a lot from the teachers to perform both tasks. I ask that you please listen to the teachers union and act in good faith while bargaining. Take our concerns seriously while reopening our schools. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Nicole. Mr. Steen, I just want to double check. Are you keeping our running time for us? Are you doing both? Oh, okay. Thank you, Mr. Carrion. So we have Ms. Carrion keeping both our 3 minute time limit and then our 20 minute time limit also. Our next public comment is Mr. Gary Rogers.
Thank you, Randy. Good evening. I'll read quick so that more people have more time. I come to the board tonight to speak on behalf of my senior and sophomore that attend Marysville High School and ask that the board bring on our high school students back to school as soon as possible once the county is in the red for 2 weeks. I would not normally come to the board to voice my opinion, but since this seems to be the only avenue we have here, I am, because the district has not asked parents why or what we want for our high school students. I have reviewed the reopening plan. There's no mention of what the plan is for high schools reopening. I have talked to almost every surrounding high school in the area, in Sutter, Butte, Placer, even Nevada County, and they all seem to have a plan. Most to come back in a hybrid model. In fact, Wheatland High School plans to start school October 26th in a hybrid model. I'm well aware of what the guidance calls for, and I believe asking for our students to come back a couple days a week is well within the guidance and can be done in a safe manner. Unfortunately, it appears the district is willing to let our high school students suffer by making them wait weeks before they can come back, despite the state saying we can if we are in the red tier. I would ask how many students need to fail or drop out before you make them a priority. I'm sure I speak for myself more than most people when I say that I'm worried about my kids' mental and physical well-being than I am of COVID. It's disappointing to me that I have to come here to have a voice and the district doesn't seem to want to put the work in to make sure all students can come back when able to do so. Let the parents who want their students back on campus do so and take the time to look at the long-term impacts that this is having on our students. The data is clear. Schools are not super spreaders and it can be done in a safe manner. My worry is that if we don't open when able to do so and we have to move back to the purple tier, then our high school students can miss the window and have to wait even longer to return to school. I hope the board will make sure that all students will return when able in the best interest of our students' mental and physical health. After listening to the teachers' union, it appears that the district and the union need to get on the same page to make sure that we're doing what is best for students and taking into account what all stakeholders want, and that is the return to school. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Katie Eubner. Again, I apologize for the pronunciation. Katie?
No, that's fine. That's close enough. Katie Eubner, thank you. So Angela covered a lot of my concerns when she spoke. One of the biggest ones is our lack of the safety MOU. And really, we've heard very little from the district regarding the waiver process, except that we would be back magically on the 20th, which then yesterday was switched to a target date of the 27th. And we as teachers are in this perpetual state of confusion and frustration because we can't plan. We don't know what to expect. And so is it the 20th? Is it the 27th? Is it mid-November? We really have no idea. And that, I think, is one of the most frustrating things. And honestly, the thought of teaching my in-person students and my distance learning students is daunting, and I really don't have any idea of how to wrap my mind around that. I teach first grade. I have 24 students. I sent out kind of a mini survey to my own parents asking, whenever it is that we reopen, because I don't know, would you prefer distance learning or in-person? And I've had about a 50-50 split. And so having to figure out how to teach 6- and 7-year-olds in the classroom while also streaming, Zooming, there's no clear guideline for us. And that is one of the biggest problems that I have. We've been told, our union's been told by the district office that it should be no more work than we're already doing now, which, to be quite honest, if you're a teacher or have ever been a teacher and can imagine what this is like, you know that that is just false. It's going to be double the work, quite simply. Many of us teachers are already stressed. Our anxiety is through the roof. And we just feel that teaching this way will not be sustainable. There are so many surrounding districts that have, if not only a separate school, like my daughter does in Plumas Lake for virtual learning for the whole year, that they at least have separate teachers at each site or the district that are teaching those virtual students. So we know that the students are going to suffer if we have to do both. I will not be able to successfully teach my students in the classroom and my students at home unless I work twice as much, and I'm already working 8, 10, 11, 12 hours a day. So we really need to figure out a more effective method for us when we go back to a hybrid model to teach those students in the classroom and those students who decide to stay on that 100% distance learning. We all know, we all want to be back in the classroom. I want to be back in the classroom, but we need to do it safely and we have to be smart about it. And I feel like we don't have a clear guideline and a clear plan for how to do it safely and in a smart way. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Amanda Bowman. Amanda, on the reopening
plan. Hello. So my name is Amanda Bowman. I'm a special education teacher at Yuba Gardens. I wanted to speak tonight a little bit about the requirements that are being added to special education teachers. On Monday, we had a staff meeting. Unfortunately, it was in the middle of the day when I meet with my paras and everybody else. So I was only able to pop in and out, and I really didn't hear all of it. But I emailed the directors this morning and asked about in-person meetings and what our plan is. Special education teachers have been told to meet with students without a health and safety MOU in place. Our only agreement right now is for distance learning, but we are being told that if we are good teachers, we will work with kids on campus. I personally have a problem with that statement. I believe I'm pretty good at my job. I love my job, and I would love to work with kids in my classroom today. My principal and I sat for an hour and a half today discussing how we're going to get kids back on campus. And I kept coming back to, as a district, we need a plan. My principal came up with a great checklist and a way to evaluate who to bring in. That's one site. We are not one site. We are a district. When I, as I said, I reached out to the directors, the answer I got was very clearly, yes, we expect you to meet with students. How am I to meet with students when I don't have an agreement? It feels very unfair. Special ed teachers are being asked to put ourselves in a position that nobody else is being asked to do. We have teachers who are working with full groups. We have teachers that are being that are meeting with students weekly at this point. That is not what we have an agreement for. I am absolutely not saying I want to never work with my students. I have a list that I would love to work with. Are they getting academic curriculum right now? Yes. Are they making progress right now? Yes. We have worked really hard to build a program where they are. So the idea that, oh, just bring in kids who aren't making progress. Ladies and gentlemen, I could argue that every one of my students needs to come in and work with me. And I'm betting you could too. So we really need everybody to come to the table and come up with a safe way of doing so. I have medically fragile students who I need to work with, right? There's no question. Let's have an MOU that covers it for everyone and make special ed teachers, not the exception, putting us in a position where we have to do something outside of a contract. That is not fair. So please encourage everybody to make an agreement.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Our next public comment is from Liz Sanchez. Liz? Give her a moment. Liz Sanchez. Okay. Our next public comment is Martha Bunk. Martha Bunk, are you there? Okay. You may have to hit star six, Mrs. Bunk.
Hello, I am a guardian of an eighth grader at Foothill Intermediate School. I am one of the people who is not going to be sending my girl back to school, in-person school. It's too dangerous for her, and it's too dangerous for me. And I assume that it's too dangerous for staff as well. But the difficulty that teachers are facing of doing in-person and blended classroom teaching is very, very, very real. And I would like some more clarification from the district in the plan about how this is going to work. I'm concerned about it. I appreciate the teachers who are working so hard. I appreciate the administrators and the board members and the staff that are working hard. We need some more clarification about how distance learning can be done at the same time as blended learning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Inga Slusler. Slusler? Inga, are you there?
I am here.
So let's see, Erica, are we going to share the screen? Is that it?
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm having trouble with my microphone. Hold on.
Okay. We won't make this part of your 3 minutes, Anita.
Okay, thank you. You can start now.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. So I just wanted to speak a little bit on the perspective, some other perspective on the reopening plan. As a kindergarten teacher who is, in the front of the line here, I wanted to point out you are discussing these plans on Zoom right now because I'm not sure that 7 adult trustees won't get COVID-19 and die by having a meeting in person at the boardroom. You are safely participating right now, which is great. I'm glad that we're able to do this. This isn't the best way to have a meeting. I get it. Just like it's not the best way to have school, but it's safer. So I wanted to relate this to like when you close a road because of safety issues, you don't reopen it when enough people are screaming about the inconvenience of that road being closed. You don't reopen the road because a survey says that people want the road to be opened. You open that road when the engineers can assure that it's safe. Parents who completed the survey obviously didn't think that the school would open the schools unless they were safe. Most people have a picture in their mind of what opening will look like. And I want to show you some pictures of what it's not going to look like. We will not be having the flag salute. We will not be having special presentations where all the kids get flags, where we have a Dr. Seuss Day, Read Across America, where volunteers come in to read, the Pumpkin Festival. we will not be able to do group work in the classroom. We're not going to have cookie time. We're not going to have kids walking in a line that looks anything like this, where they're having fun. Normal daily activities like getting a drink of water. Right now, all the water is taped over with caution tape. And using the bathroom, there's still a lot of question about how often and who is going to have to disinfect that. My custodian told me that that was why he gave me the spray bottle and the paper towels. I don't believe that's what my principal believes, but that's what I was told by my custodian. So there's confusion. We won't be going to library time. We won't be going to music. We won't be having substitute teachers. And our fire and lockdown drills are really going to be special because we can't cluster up. And, you know, God forbid that there's an actual lockdown.
Okay, you have 10 seconds.
Thank you. Using classroom manipulatives, we won't be able to do working together, having performances like the winter performance, having parents in the classroom, being able to play on the.
Thank you very much for your comment. Your 3 minutes are up. Oh, thank you very much.
That was my last
Randy.
Yes, go.
I have one question, a clarification. Yeah. Inga, did you say that teachers have to clean the bathrooms?
I don't know if my microphone's working. Oh, yeah, it is. What I said was that it's obviously not clear what's happening with bathrooms. So in my classroom, I have a bathroom. So I don't know what I'm supposed to do if a student goes to the bathroom and then another student needs to go to the bathroom, who's supposed to disinfect in between. My custodian said, well, that's why I left this spray and paper towels here. And I pointed out that I can't go in the bathroom and clean the bathroom and leave children alone in the classroom. I later had a conversation with my principal, and she's awesome. And I don't want to have to file a grievance with her, but I'm going to have to. Anyway, she said that the thing about the bathroom still wasn't clear yet, I believe, in the plan as far as how that's going to be addressed, that the bathrooms would be regularly cleaned, not necessarily in between each use, which is good news for the custodian.
Hey, okay, Jeff, I think in the plan, I remember it was around page 17 or 25 or somewhere. The plan said something about having cleaning supplies available for teachers as necessary. So it does, to me, that implied the teachers had to clean up stuff.
I do think I would like to say that I thank you. All is for clarifying questions, not to add input during the public comment. So thank you. Inga, were you finished there?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Next public comment on school reopening is Linda Strang. Linda?
Okay, good evening. Since the reopening of schools is being discussed, let's take a hypothetical look at reopening of school board meetings. You are given some information. Surprisingly, the public is given different information, but the lawyer assures you that Mr. Cena did not mean to say what he told the public. You want to stay healthy, so you request that all the proper safety equipment be at your workspace. You also ask that social distancing be practiced. You are told it will be done if practicable. As it turns out, it is not practicable to hold an extra school board meeting, so the boardroom is packed. Everyone attending has been screened, but don't ask if anyone in their home has coronavirus. You can't ask that question. Well, that's okay, as they will all wear masks, except some don't and are not required to do so. That's okay, you'll wear your mask, except there isn't one. Well, you can use your plexiglass shield, except the district office denied the need for one. Next, you need to pick up the public comments cards. Wanting to stay healthy, you decide to put on gloves, except they are not there. You express your concerns about the lack of equipment, but you're told it's all there. You can clearly see that equipment's not there. It's not where it's supposed to be. But as far as the district is concerned, there's no problem, and you have everything you need. Perhaps now you understand my frustration. There is a comprehensive study conducted by Harvard Medical School, Massachusetts General Hospital, and Massachusetts General Hospital for Children. The findings that were children, even those with mild or no symptoms, were found to have significantly higher levels of virus in their respiratory secretions than adults. Alessio Fanasu, the senior study author, stated that kids are not immune and should not be discounted as potential spreaders. In fact, the U.S. News and World Report states that 1/3 of teachers are at a higher risk for coronavirus. Even the National Association of School Psychologists published that there will be deaths that will impact teachers, staff, students, and the community. I would really hope this is a cause of concern for you. I am not expendable. Stop the district office from treating me as such and reopen schools the right way. Please, as board members, take a more active role in the process of reopening schools and speak with a variety of stakeholders. The last thing I want is for people to experience guilt and remorse because a lack of prudence caused the deaths of staff, students, family members, and fellow community members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Carrion, are we approaching our maximum time?
One more.
We have one more?
We have enough time for one.
Time for one more. Thank you. So the others that we do have under this comment, we will keep for the next regular board meeting. So with regard to the reopening plan, our next and final public comment is from Wendy Ramirez. Wendy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go
right ahead. Hi, good evening, board. I'm a second grade teacher who lives with two autoimmunocompromised people and two elderly adults who happen to be my parents. I feel my family is not expendable. Therefore, I support all grade levels having the same safety precautions, including wearing masks. I support my union, and I need more transparency and communication from the district, including an MOU on safety precautions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Ramirez. Because that was short, thank you. We do have time for one more. Deborah Warner? Ms. Warner, are you there?
I am here, yes. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Hi. My name is Deborah Warner, and I'm a third grade teacher from Arboga Elementary School. This is my 31st year in this district. I born and raised in Marysville, went through all the school system here, and have been really proud to be part of this district. I'm really concerned, though. I've listened to the comments from my fellow teachers. I have a lot of the same concerns that they have. I think the MOU is extremely important. I am a person who has some health issues, and I'm very concerned about being face-to-face with my children without having proper safety measures in place. I also want to talk about Inga's presentation because it really struck me. My students have spoken to me on Zoom. We Zoom, if you want to talk about Zoom, Mr. Rasmussen, I Zoom for about 4 hours intermittently all day long. The kids get on and off, but I'm on the entire, from 8 o'clock till noon and have a half an hour lunch, and then I'm back on with my kids in the afternoon because I'm available to them constantly. And I get constant calls from parents that I know I should stop later in the evening, but that's when they can communicate. And so what do? You communicate when they have the time to do it. Anyway, when I'm communicating with my kids during a Zoom, they're telling me what they think school's going to be like, and they have absolutely no idea that they're not going to be huddled together and discussing problems and finding solutions to questions that I'm asking. They have no idea that when they go out on the playground, that they're not going to be playing with equipment necessarily or even getting close to each other on the playground. Think about a third grade line. Our three third grade classrooms have approximately 26 kids apiece, which puts us in the classroom 14 people at any one time. But when you make our line to go out to the cafeteria, or make a line to go to the office, or to the parent pickup spot, can you imagine how long our third grade line would be with 26 kids in a class, or 26 kids in a class? The length of our line alone is going to be horrendous. And so you put on the kindergartners are there, and the first graders are there, and the second graders are there. And what is our line going to look like? Literally, it seems like our whole day in school will be spent walking to the classroom, and then walking from the classroom back to parent pickup. It's going to be a major line issue, just trying to keep them separated. And if you've ever walked in a line with third graders, you know that them keeping that distance is going to be very interesting, because the bumping of kids alone is, they don't watch where they walk. They bump into each other constantly. It's an issue. My ultimate goal, though, in talking to you tonight is just to, I'm going back to the MOU, the fact that we need that MOU, the fact that we need these safety measures in place.
Thank you, Supporter. That is the time for your statement. Thank you very much for your comments. Next, we have a variety of different topic areas. Our next one is from Amanda Bowman, and the topic is public comments. I'm not really sure, but Amanda, did you want to speak towards public comments?
So actually, those were two separate. One was for the opening plan, and one was public comment. I probably did mine backwards. Special ed teacher, what can I tell you? My public comment about the opening plan is, I know I'm backwards, I apologize. Thank you. That, again, if we could just come together and have a solid plan, all will work well.
So Ms. Bowman, you talked earlier, you already talked about the opening plan regarding to special education, right?
No, that was not about the opening plan. That was a direction that we have been given from the special ed department. It had nothing to do with the opening plan. It was pre-opening plan. It's just what we've been told to do.
Okay, what I'd like to do then, I'll put you for the next meeting with regard to the opening plan, because we've already ran out of time for that topic.
Okay.
Thank you. Next, we have a public comment from Undisclosed. Topic, I want to say thank you to both sides, district, union, because I know everyone is working hard and stressed. There are so many students suffering because of the current model, but I know that there are many teachers that also want to be as safe as possible when we return. I hope the agreement can be made, but mostly I hope for our eventual return. I'm looking at other schools and have successfully been having students on campus. Do they have a safety MOU? Are we just behind? Wheeland High School, which is in the same county, is planning a freshman orientation this month already. I'm curious to see if any other district is having a hard time like we are. It's hard to take a side because we want to be safe, but these students need to be back. I have my own personal beliefs on the topic, but I thought I would just send this as undisclosed. I don't need to talk at the board meeting. So after reading that, I think maybe I made a mistake. That does certainly sound like it has to do with reopening. And I apologize for reading that, because we were supposed to be done. The next public comment is Tammy Strozini regarding the waiver submission. Tammy, would you like to speak to that again?
I already did, so I don't need any more time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Our next public comment is from Rosalie Urbia on distance learning and Go Guardian. Rosalie, are you there? No? Our next is from Ann Covert. Topic, I do not wish to speak, but I want to note my support for MUTA's continued effort to bargain with district on MOU on safety and hybrid learning. Please work towards keeping us safe and showing us all we are valued. Okay, again, those are all our public comments. We will put the ones that did not speak on school reopening for the beginning of our next regular scheduled board meeting. Okay, next we have the superintendent's report. Mr. Cena?
Together, serving every student, every day, in every way. Since March 11, we have all been on a shared journey determining how schools will be open. Throughout our journey, we share four collective goals. We want to slow the spread of COVID-19. We want to ensure the health and safety of students and staff. We want to maintain relationships, and we want to facilitate student learning. Along our way, public health guidance has provided our compass. On March 16th, public health guidance said, stay open. We were the last district in the Tri-County area to close schools because guidance said the spread hadn't hit yet and that the best thing was for students to be in school. For graduation ceremonies, guidance was drive-through diploma pickup. We worked very hard to facilitate that process and make it as special for students as we could, given the health and safety guidance. On July 17th, guidance said distance learning to slow the spread of COVID-19. As of today, Tuesday, October 13th, we learned that Yuba County will be off the watch list after October 20th, as Yuba County goes from the most restrictive purple phase to a less restrictive red phase. We're down to an average of 4.7 cases per day in Yuba County. This means the school in Yuba County can now start school-wide, in-person, blended instruction beginning Wednesday, October 21st. Just because schools can start on the 21st doesn't mean that they must. That choice is up to each individual school district. Public health officials say that schools should start in prudent, patient, rational, and measured ways and prevent the yo-yo effect going from one instructional program to the other. In a recent parent survey, 70% of our families expressed desire to open schools for in-person blended instruction. As of today, public health guidance says we can start as soon as a week from tomorrow. Our approach is to start small and go slow so we can grow. Along our way, I want to pause to thank all of the staff in varying roles who are providing in-person support intervention to special education students, English learners, homeless, and foster youth. In addition, thank you to the leadership teams at Dobbins, Yuba Feather, Marysville High School, Transportation, Ed Services, the Tech Department, and Program Services for creating internet access opportunities for high school students at Dobbins Elementary, which started last week, and for elementary students at Yuba Feather Elementary School. I also want to thank all the staff in varied roles who are making preparations for blended learning in terms of classroom spacing, ingress, egress of student travel, cleaning and disinfecting, signage, technological infrastructure and bandwidth for live streaming, connectivity, and the thousands of interconnected details it is going to take to successfully provide school-wide in-person blended instruction. I want to thank certificated staff who are working so hard, not only on distance learning, but toward preparing instructionally for blended learning. This is not at all an easy task, but I'm impressed with the spirit, energy, and ingenuity invested in ideas that work for students and teachers to maintain relationships and facilitate learning. This is the reason we moved the March 10th teacher workday to next Monday, October 19th, so teachers can train and strengthen capacity in the face of new challenges so they feel more confident and comfortable. Tonight's board meeting contributes to our journey in two new business items. In the first item, we're going to share updates to 2021 MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan and ask the board to approve this plan as an ongoing working document that will be updated regularly based on public health guidance, stakeholder feedback, and practice, as has been demonstrated since early July. The second item allows the board an opportunity to discuss options for reopening schools for school-wide in-person blended instruction. Both of these items will provide strong guidance for all of our stakeholders as we all continue preparations for blended learning, together serving every student, every day, in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have Superintendent, item number one, approval of the minutes. Minutes for the regular board meeting of 9/22/20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Clerk. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Trustee Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bowe.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Clerk.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Next, we have the consent agenda. Are there any items on the consent agenda that a board member would like to have pulled? Not hearing any. Is there a motion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda. Frank Crawford.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that. Susan Scott.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bowe. Trustee Bowe.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Next, we have new business, student services, 2020-21, MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the 2020-21 MJUSD proposed pandemic school reopening plan as the MJUSD prepares transition to school-wide in-person instruction. Mr. Cena?
Yes, we'd like to share updates to the current plan. And starting on page 3, those of you, or if you have your hard copy for board members that was distributed to you with your board packet, on page 3, there's there's 10 attachments, and those are all additions to the reopening plan, starting with the first one on page 40, which you've seen before, which is the brochure that on July 21st that we had our team present based on this model. And we are currently working on a new model for parents and students and all stakeholders, as well as a video, so that helping people better understand the expectations and the practices for being healthy and safe. The second attachment, starting on page 44, we're gonna have our director of buildings and grounds share, Mr. Travis Barnett.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the board.
Yeah, just to kind of go over the protocols here, we just wanted to share with you that we've really gone deep and dove into covering all bases as far as ensuring our students and staff safety. We've developed these protocols looking at cleaning and disinfecting, looking into ventilation and other areas. If we can go ahead and turn to the next slide. You know, this is one of the examples we're talking about here when we're talking about ventilation. We're, you know, going throughout the district and changing out all HVAC filters to MERV 13 where applicable. We're also doing that more frequently than we did before, where previously we were changing them about every 90 days, we're changing them about every 60. And we're constantly getting an influx of new filters through our vendors. So you'll see another example down low where you see these cards. These have been handed out to each one of our custodial staff members. On each one of these cards, it shows clearly what the expectations are. It allows our custodial staff to go through and do this checklist and make sure that everything has been completed and nothing's missed. So again, we've handed out these cards to every one of our custodial staff. We don't want anything being overlooked. So we're just going to continue to educate and provide all the materials necessary to make sure nothing's overlooked. Next slide, please. So again, we go into, trying to cover all bases here. We're looking at, you know, this is a memo we've went through and we've kind of looked at a scenario. A lot of questions have come out about, are we, you know, what if one of our staff members test positive for corona? What do we do about that? So again, this is a memo that went out just to verify that everything was completed or everything of what protocols would come into hand, what protocols we would follow in the event that one of our staff members did contract it. So again, we just want to show you that we're looking at it from, you know, a 10,000 foot level versus, you know, if we're wondering what happens in the event of. So we're really trying to go about these things from a perspective, it's an evolving document, but we're trying to look at it from so many different angles to make sure that we have it covered. Next slide, please. When we're looking at here, you know, we're looking at these nice flyers that we've put up in all sorts, on all the classrooms. It's just a nice, friendly reminder for everyone when they come into classrooms to, you know, read it, to wipe down door handles, light switches, things like that. Just a general information piece that our custodial staff as well is aware of. So, you know, all this cleaning and disinfecting, you know, we're really taking it seriously. We want to make sure that we've covered all bases, all communication. And I'm going to keep saying over and over, as this thing rolls out, it's an evolving document. There may be things that come up that we need to add to these protocols. But really, we're doing our best to make sure that all the communication's out there. And we're really pleased with how it's going so far and ensuring, you know, communication's open. Next slide. This is another example. We've gone through with our custodial staff, and every restroom you're going to see these maintenance logs. They will be hung up in the restroom. So there won't be any more question about, did my restroom get cleaned or did it not? We're really taking this to the next level of accountability to make sure that in the event something feels, you know, somebody feels like the restrooms aren't being cleaned, we're going to pull this log. We're going to look at it for verification reasons. Again, we're taking this extremely seriously. We want to make sure that if we have any faults or any weak links, so to speak, that we can go back and address them and make sure that we are doing our best to follow through. It's really important that we have accountability during this time. And I want to ensure everybody that from the Buildings and Grounds Department, that's exactly what we're looking at. Next slide.
As we went back on page 49 was the frequently touched surfaces. And they're posted, created by program services, and be posted in every classroom. And next, third attachment are the Bi-County Health Officer Memos, pages 50 to 55. And our program services director, Jessica Goof, is going to share.
Thank you. Hello, and thank you for supporting us through this presentation. The attachments from our Bi-County Health Officer provide further clarification around the fact that we are able to provide services in person to specific groups of students, including counseling students, special education, and English learners. And so we have already began that process with assessing our English learners and in some instances for students with special needs are being met with in person. So that is one. Next slide, please. So while we receive these letters from Dr. Liu, we also are meeting with her weekly to get further guidance and clarification around these areas and how we need to ensure we're following all of the health and safety protocols and stay updated. And there's some clarification around waivers for elementary school as well in that attachment. And finally, the second letter from Dr. Liu clarifies the cohort guidance and references the September 4th guidance from the CDPH, as well as what extracurricular activities that we're supposed to adhere to. Unfortunately, outdoor and indoor sporting events that promote congregating are not permitted at this time. And it outlines what we can do with youth sports and physical education within the cohort guidance. And so we do actually have some sports conditioning occurring right now, which is great under this guidance.
Christina Royer is going to share the guidance that came out August 25th regarding the specialized population.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you also for listening. I'm going to be sharing this California All letter containing the California Department of Public Health guidance on cohorts. It's provided in the proposed plan in pages 55 through 59. And you'll see here at the beginning of the letter that there's a description. The cohorting guidance was issued by the CDPH on August 25th of 2020, setting minimum health and safety guidelines for public and private schools and childcare. And next slide, please. The intention here is to establish minimum parameters for providing specialized services, targeted services, and support for students while schools are otherwise closed for in-person instruction, with limiting cohort size, restricting cohort mixing, and maintains proper physical distancing, masking, cleaning, and other safety measures. This guidance enables schools to provide supervision and care for students, including specialized services, for the most vulnerable learners. So those would be students able to be served in cohorts during school closures, prioritized by schools for receiving targeted supports and services. Targeted and specialized support services could be part of an intervention strategy or assessment, and these could be related to English learner status, individualized educational programs, and other required assessments. Additionally, English learners, students at higher risk of further learning loss or not participating in distance learning, students at risk of abuse or neglect, foster youth, and students experiencing homelessness may also be prioritized. So here you'll see that cohorts are stable groups of students with the same supervising adults that stay together throughout the day. They're limited to no more than 14 students and no more than two adults in a supervised environment. Cohorts can be smaller than 14, staffed by one to two consistent adults. Cohorts can be divided into smaller groups. Additional specialized services or targeted supports can also be provided by staff working with as few cohorts as possible, and cohorts should not mix. The number of cohorts will depend on the school's enrollment and available building capacity. Cleaning and wiping surfaces must be maintained between multiple student uses.
Thank you. So as we prepare for school-wide blended instruction and making our plans, we'll exercise cohort and serve specialized populations. Our Director of Student Discipline and Attendance, Mr. Jolie Critchfield, is going to share this addition to the plan on page 60.
Yes. So hello, as you can see, our print shop did a wonderful job in creating signage for our students, reminders to check in, to stay on one side of the hallway, to keep their distance 6 feet across. And so the signage is consistent throughout the district. So if you go from one school to another, you'll see these same signs. And this is just an example. Browns Valley School had put that on their floor, and then all the wellness check-in signs that are there. So just so that we're all on the same page. Thank you.
Thank you. And starting on page 61, going to 69 are the screening protocols. Part of the health and safety protocol is prevention or slowing the spread of COVID-19. And again, our program services director will share this addition.
All right. So what Mr. Cena said, the screening process is one of the foundations for ensuring that we slow the spread of COVID-19 in our environment and that we keep everyone safe who will be attending school or who are on our campuses. So this is one step that we can take. And you will see the different protocols that have been put in place to establish this active screening process for our staff. And when they are able to pass the screener by not having a temperature or displaying any of the symptoms, they are able to check in with a QR code so we can make sure that we can contact trace in the event there is a positive case on campus. We will be doing something similar for our students. However, we will be taking temperatures and doing a visual wellness check and not asking all of the questions that are listed here. But you will find a link in the electronic version to the training, to our active screening process. And I feel like it's going very well. We have seen a lot of the active screeners across campus and everybody's implementing this. Next slide. Go ahead to the next slide. Okay, and then you will know if somebody has been screened and passed the screener if you see a wristband. So I'm wearing one right now, and I'm sure those of you who came in received one. Today is yellow because it is Tuesday. So we are making sure that we make appointments and notify visitors that this will be occurring. Next slide. There's a specific script that's asked, and you are also not able to pass the screener if you've been a direct contact with a confirmed case, and because you're expected to be quarantined for 14 days. And there's a picture of a couple of our screeners. They look really happy to do this job. Next slide. So when you don't pass the screener, you get a card, and this is an example of the failed screening cards. And we just recently updated that if they have a fever, they're not able to return until they're asymptomatic or have not had the fever for 24 hours without the use of fever reducing medication. It used to be 3 days, and so that's been reduced to 24 hours. And then we have them fill out this QR failed screening in the event that we need to follow up and make sure everything's okay with that person who maybe did not pass that screener. Next slide.
Okay. Dr. Greco, can you go back to the page 61 and point out, not all board members there, can you put the pointer on the temperature check so that board members can see what instruments use that people walk up and have their temperature screened?
Oh, In the picture, right? Are you talking in the picture? Yes.
Yes. Yes. So that people get a picture of what types of devices we're using. Okay, now back to page 70. The attachments 7, 8, 9 are all additions to the plan, and they're all examples of health and safety protocols that are requested by Dr. Liu. And on page 70, first of all, talking about direction to directors and principals regarding positive cases on site, how that's communicated. First of all, the contact tracing, and then communicating that to staff as well as district-wide, and then how that will be communicated district-wide. The next one on page 71 is a process explaining, as with a letter that was sent to all stakeholders on August 13th, and outlining that starting with a positive confirmed case, then identifying direct contacts, that and that the who will receive word and how all stakeholders will receive word, so that there's communication as we have positive cases. So that's an example of practice. The and then on page starting on page 73 is an actual one of the letters that everyone here tonight has read or been informed about positive cases as they develop, so we'd be as transparent, and that we can respond and close the circle on that spread in that particular area, so that once schools start up again, the state is not going to close us. We will determine when we close based on discussions with public health and specific criteria that are in the California Department of Public Health guidelines. And then finally, attachment on page 74, Director Goose will share what's added there. I guess I will. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, it was taking me a while to get back on, get my video back on. So finally, we want to make sure that everybody is aware of the various testing sites that are offered in our community in the event that they think they have been exposed to COVID-19 or have symptoms. So these are all from the Yuba County Public Health website, and they are all places that you can access COVID-19 tests. And it seems like recently that it is taking about 3 days to receive the results to those tests. So we do have opportunities locally to get testing in our area.
Thank you. Now we go back into the guts of the document itself. And starting on page 5, there's promoting behaviors that reduce the spread. The first bullet, stay home when appropriate. And the first bullet after that is just throughout the document defining what a direct contact is. That it's within 6 feet for 15 minutes or more. That seems to be, in contact tracing, that seems to be a key concept that helps people and helps on day-to-day prevention, is being aware and conscious of who we're that close to for how long. And so those are added, that's added there and throughout the document. And then also down further below, it's reference to the attachment 71-72, which talks about attachment number 10, which talks about the letter for how we communicate with our stakeholders about positive cases. On pages 6 and 7, our director of purchasing, Brian Horn, is going to share what's been added to the guidance on facial coverings.
Yeah, so as far as facial coverings, we have been pursuing enough facial coverings for the entire district, and this includes face masks for the TK through 6, and as well as the older students in the secondary schools, as well as the teachers and faculty. So we've been doing masks, and we've also done the face shields. And as the goalposts have kind of moved, we have been required to procure tens of thousands of face shields themselves. And now we're procuring the face shields with the actual drapes. And we have sent all these face coverings to the schools. And we also keep a vast supply in our warehouses, which the schools can order whenever they need to replenish their supplies. So I don't know if you have a picture of the face shield with the drape, but yes, there it is. And we definitely have them, and we are ready to go.
Thank you. And again, Director Barnett is going to share where the pieces have changed in terms of maintaining healthy environments, starting on page 7 and going through page 9.
Yes, it would help if unmuted. So maintaining healthy environments. You know, as previously shared on the slides, we know that a high standard of cleanliness must be maintained. And it's for that reason we have created, you know, cleaning logs, as you see here, with a lot of testing protocols. We turn to page 8. As you'll see on, sorry, I got my paper here because it's small. I think it's the third bullet point down. You know, all a cleaning log will be displayed in each restroom. As you can see on the third bullet point, we do have the cleaning logs displayed in each restroom, which we have shown a copy of what we'll be using. The logs will help us keep staff accountable, ensure these spaces are being cleaned regularly. When you go ahead and scroll down, another important thing to look at would be bullet point number 6. Again, this brings us back to previous slides where we've, you know, provided cleaning disinfecting cards for our custodial staff to carry and to ensure cleaning and disinfecting steps are missed. So if you could turn to page 10. All right. And so, you know, another, you know, really important thing to look at here is I think we moved one too far. There we are. All right. So we're going to look at, you know, talking about the ventilation. If you bring your eye down to the ventilation, we've replaced air filters district-wide, again, with a MERV 13 where applicable. We're changing the filters more regularly. You know, we're looking at, you know, recently we've gone around and we've turned off all drinking fountains. I know that's scary to hear, but we've shut them all down. We've wrapped them up so students can't get to them. But the district is providing water, and we're making sure bottle filling stations where they are at the sites are accessible. So again, we're not shutting all water off to where people don't have access to it, but we're going to be providing bottles of waters or like watering stations, you know, like the Colligan type style. If you go ahead and look on down to the fourth bullet, when we're talking about physical barriers, you saw a couple slides in there with pictures where we had the plexiglass barriers up. We've worked hard, even the maintenance and operations, fabricating some of those. We've distributed them district-wide for our areas. So if we have 6 students, we can, you know, kind of get them under a quarantine type of situation there. We've also worked with purchasing and procuring more partitions. We've made sure that inside the classroom setting that if there is an area where it can't be 6 feet apart, students, you know, partitions will be in place. So that'll be, those barriers will be provided where, you know, the 6-foot social distancing is difficult to achieve. So we've kind of looked at this from a 10,000 foot level to try and mitigate or try to get in front of any type of scenario we might have. But we feel like we've got a really good grasp on this. And as I stated, we're always open to the feedback and adding more. But I know that the health and safety of our students and staff is number one priority. So in the buildings and grounds department, we're really working hard to ensure that every student and teacher has the materials they need to feel safe and secure at schools when they return. And we can go to the next slide.
Thank you. Pages 10 and 11, our Director of Efficient Services, Amber Watson, is going to share what's been added.
Hi, good evening. Thank you. And the big change or addition in this section is how we will serve the blended and cohorts their meals. And so our biggest challenge and important role is to ensure that students are receiving meals daily. And so as they are coming to school in the blended model or on distance learning, we want to ensure they're getting their meals. So we're making great effort to ensure that we get breakfast, lunch, supper, and snack provided to all kids that need it. I have started the conversations with the site administrators looking at how to address meal service at each site. Campuses vary greatly with the size, the quantity of students, the locations of dismissal, and we will basically have to create custom plans at the sites. We may be delivering meals to the classroom for dismissal time. We may be taking them to the gate, or there may be students walk to the cafeteria to pick up behind a partition. And in addition, we will be serving our preschool students as well, and they will receive the day's worth of meals as well. Our new standard is 4 meals every day, so breakfast, lunch, supper, snack, and we want to maintain that as long as we can. And we also want to maintain it for our siblings or non-enrolled children that live in the community that need food as well. So a family might be homeschooled and they can still receive meals from us. And actually, we have some really great news that we're able to do that through the entire school year now. That was just passed by USDA. So the one thing we'll maintain is the punch card for the curbside pickup, so families or parents can pick up meals without children being present with the punch card. But when kids come to school, they won't have to carry their punch card. We'll know that they're students, and I use a roster to account for them.
Thank you. On page 13, at the bottom of page 13, you see the attachments 3 and 4, which refer to Dr. Liu's guidance as well as the state guidance on specialized populations that were presented earlier. On page 14, in the middle of the page, Director Guth is going to share just the addition to the plan regarding cohorts.
We skipped over transportation. Did we want to do transportation first?
Two more. One more.
Okay.
There we go.
We already did this one. Sorry, Rocco.
I have nothing on slide for you.
Okay.
I think we should be on transportation. You were on it, Rocco, right after, yeah. And Greg was going to talk to that.
There's no change in transportation plans. Our plans are still the same as they were before. I believe we're going to go on past transportation.
This is Jeff. On transportation, has there been any discussion of family members that live together allowing more than one per seat?
Yeah, we do allow that. So siblings can sit next to each other, but they still have to maintain the 6 feet from the other students. So they can do that.
Okay. It'll allow us just maybe a couple more students per bus. Then.
Yeah, it would.
Thank you.
Okay, Dr. Griffin, go ahead and go to the next one, and go to the next one, and go ahead and go to the next slide, the next one. Right here. Go ahead. Okay.
So, are you going to speak to this, Gary? Okay, on this page, we reference cohorts again, as Christina had mentioned earlier, the guidance towards utilizing cohorts, whether it be in the sports or at school when we're serving special populations of students. One example of the use of the cohorts is up in Dobbins when we have students accessing internet currently. They're aligning to this direction around cohorts.
Page 15. Implementing physical distancing inside and outside the classroom, arrival and departure. Dr. Rocco Greco, our executive director of education services, is going to share plans that are going on in those areas.
Okay, so just briefly talking about ingress and egress, and we've talked about the screener, understanding that this is going to go deeper than just a temperature check and a symptoms screen. What we're going to be doing on the 19th as well is working with some of the additional folks who will be working at these tables. So right now what we've done is there'll be an ingress point set up at each place where you have access to the campus. So depending on the campus and how it's established, you could have anywhere from 3 to 7 ingress points. At each of those points, you would have the screening going on and available. We're figuring at this point a minimum of 2 to 3 people will be needed. One person to do the screening, another person to kind of help with the line as people are showing up, and then another person to be able to start steering the kids or guiding them as they come into campus to assure that we're not mixing kids as they're coming in to the campus. So at this point, ingress is kind of set. You saw in some of the other images that were established, there's directionality to the hallways. And then there will be a lot of training and working with students as they're coming in, which is part of the reason for the phasing in, is starting and training the younger students to be able to follow the parameters in order to be able to keep everybody safe as we're going through it. So again, at this point, we have the scanners and the folks set up. On our professional development day, we'll be working with the people who will be doing there. There will be some difficult conversations if a parent or someone is to bring a student to school. And maybe they are okay temperature-wise, but they're quite visibly sick. It's going to be a difficult conversation letting a parent know or somebody that the child is not able to come into campus. So just kind of working with our staff to figure out the most compassionate and kind way to be able to do that, but to assure that a sick student is not being allowed into campus to jeopardize the ability for us to remain open or to get any of our staff or other students sick at this point. And then here you can kind of see some of the directionality that we had talked about as it's being set up at the schools. And then as you come to work with anybody on the ingress point, as people are needing to come to the school, visitors and folks who are not there for the daily program will be limited. There still is access through the main office, and security protocols have been set up there as well.
Yeah, at the bottom of page 15, our assistant superintendent of business services, Benny Lofting, is going to share work that's being done for ensuring classroom space and changes in the plan.
Good evening, everyone. In regards to the classroom space, the third bullet down there, we're going to be maximizing the space between desks and other seating. We will ensure that student desks are not closer than 6 feet from teacher desks, and that there's adequate space between each student's desk. You've seen that in some of the pictures. Where we cannot achieve 6 feet of distancing between student desks, there'll be a partition placed, and that'll provide the separation. There'll be markings on either the desks or the floors to indicate where students should sit, and desks will be arranged so that there's little, if any, face-to-face. face-to-face contact between students. And then on page 16, the top bullet, and we may not have a picture of it, but there's instructions for maximizing spacing and in a way that's easy for students to understand. We'll accomplish that by posting some of the signage, like what you've seen in some of these photos. And these signs will be placed both inside and outside the classrooms, and that'll help minimize the movement and maximize the space between students. We do have teams visiting sites to help identify areas that might require additional supply or equipment or signage to help us achieve the required distancing.
Thank you. On page 21, Dr. Greco is going to share the blended learning instructional model.
So as we go back, when we look at this model, and again, I think we know that everything that we're doing here is best guess and trying to do the best we can with the information that's forever changing. But as we move forward in trying to get students back full time, the plan was based on several principles. So the first was that we recognized that instruction, in-person instruction with our teachers is the best possible way to keep students learning. But we need to keep everybody safe in doing that and follow all protocols. We know that they learn best when they're with their teachers. And I think distance learning, everyone is doing their very, very best. And if you were to look at the data, I believe you would see that it's nowhere near as good as being in contact with teachers on a daily basis. MJUSD's planning is built around the desire to bring students back full time as soon as possible, but not getting ourselves outside of the health and safety guidelines. Our relationships with the community, with the teachers, and with everyone right now is a critical component to education. We need the connection to the school and to the teachers, no matter what educational phase we're in. And definitely throughout this year, distance learning, whether you're in blended or whether you're in pure distance learning, is going to be a component that everyone will continue to deal with until the distancing requirements are lifted. Distance learning will be part of all of these solutions as we go forward for the rest of this year, at very least. And then regardless of the phase of instruction, parents will have the opportunity to select if they're not feeling safe or wanting to come back to a hybrid model to keep their students on distance learning for the remainder of the year. So as we move through that, I'm going to hand it over to Coordinator Wright just for a few moments to talk a little bit about the blended learning model and some of the things that we're working on and trainings that we're working on for the 19th to help teachers in preparing for this monumental task.
Great, thank you. As we look through everything here, definitely keep in mind that there's no one way that this is going to look in every single classroom. I know there's a lot of requests for tell us what to do, but there's also various district teachers that have different ways of learning and different school sites. So as we look through and look at what a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday could look like, definitely keeping in mind that our teachers that are up at Yuba Feather have a very different set of students and learning needs without having internet as we do down in town. So there is a bit of flexibility and consideration going into those areas. So you'll see on the pages as you look through 26 to 29 our various schedules. They look very similar, but because of the different grade levels and instructional minutes, you'll see some variation in the lunch times and the release times and even the distance learning times at the end of the day. And again, that's just to account for the different instructional minutes. As we go through the slides, rather than just look at a bunch of pictures that you have in the folder, we wanted to visualize and let you see what distance learning or hybrid, as you call it, is going to actually look like visually. A lot of the concerns that we have and questions that we have is why can't some teachers just do distance learning and some teachers just work with the kids in the classroom? And unfortunately, as we're going into this hybrid learning or the blended model, if you look at the visual ahead of you, there's always going to be distance learning going on. And you're going to have teachers working in the classroom with kids, specifically Monday, all kids are at home. Tuesday, Wednesday, you have your cohort A in the classroom while cohort B students are at home. In addition to that, though, the consideration where you could say, oh, we'll just put distance learners at home, at any given time, you could have kids that are sick leaving the classroom, having to go in and out, or a case of COVID that comes up that requires the classroom to go in and out. So a lot more of the learning does still have to be distance learning based. And I'll talk about in the next slide in a moment what that will look like. But as you're considering what school is going to look like, it's important to just know it's going to be different. And it's going to be different in many ways as far as distance learning and how that looks now and how it will look as we move forward into the blended model. So on the next slide, just to give you an idea of what we're doing in educational services to support teachers as we go through this and what we're doing to help students, is thinking a moment about how teachers are going to help students and what those instructional minutes look like. The one commonality that all students are going to have, obviously, is the teacher in the classroom, and that's the most powerful connection that they're going to have to the school. Beyond that, we have tools like Google Classroom that can keep students doing the same types of lessons, but in various ways, depending on if they're at home doing distance learning or if they're at school in person. And so I just want people to think about, as we go forward, we can't look at things the way that they've always been because they're not going to be that way. And that can be very uncomfortable. I do want to say I talk a lot with teachers as a teacher myself this year as well. I'm not going to give up on the students and I'm not going to give up on the teachers. We need to be creative and support each other. So this visual here is really just to show what it could look like for some teachers when you have your cohort in class. They would be meeting with the teacher in the mornings and they would get their their group time with their teacher. Whereas the kids that are at home, their day might be shifted a little bit later. And I do want to address that briefly because most teachers right now have started their morning Zooms with their kids on distance learning. And that's been a routine that has been set up. Those students that are home distance learning, their time is now shifted to the afternoon. They'll be able to receive their teacher support from 1 to 2 p.m. So that does juggle the schedule a little bit and something that needs to be kept in mind. What that does allow for is while teachers are doing their in-class instruction, they could be recording Screencastify videos of their document camera work and posting that to Google Classroom so the teachers at home are getting that. Depending on how teachers have been doing their Google Classroom assignments now, some teachers have already been doing video lessons for everything that they do. They could continue to offer that support. There are opportunities to be doing some live streaming. We're looking into what that will look like and how the district internet will be able to support the live streaming. And that would allow kids at home to be able to see what teachers are doing in the classroom. Not the interaction with the students, but the focus on the actual content. What's important to remember here is the kids that are in the classroom are meeting their instructional minutes while they're at class. They're not going to have to go home and then rush to be online for that distance learning in the afternoon. And I know that was sometimes what people were interpreting from the charts that we have. The goal, if everyone keeps in mind, if we're looking at our true guiding principles, is to really be able to be flexible if we do have to transition in and out of distance learning and blended learning. And I know that's hard to think about this back and forth. We want consistency. But we don't have control over what the numbers go up and down in the county. And so things could go back and forth and teachers need to be prepared for that possibility. And by setting up classrooms and structures that allow for both distance learning and blended learning at the same time, it will allow it to be more seamless should that need arise. The other thing is just the really strong focus on teacher connections. Kids come to school for the teachers. That time in the classroom, whether it's just the 2 days a week, that's powerful time that teachers get to really maximize their relationships and support the kids instead of just providing feedback through Zoom or through typing on Google Classroom. And the benefits of that are going to be huge. When they're in the classroom, it may look more traditional for some teachers, or it may be a total different spin because now we have a lot of different tools. On October 19th, we're going to be offering about 20 sessions for teachers to choose from. that will support them as we move into hybrid learning and different ways to engage students and also to simplify the learning, different programs that will make their teaching effective, but also easier in some regards. And so we're working to find different ways. I'm constantly talking to teachers and sharing ideas, brainstorming ideas, and it is going to be different. But I believe that it can be very powerful and that the student outcomes will be positive as kids are coming back into school with supports.
And I just want to add one thing to that, because with every change, there's pros and cons, there's gains and losses. So I think specifically of kindergarten teachers or the very, very low grade levels, if those teachers are spending, and you heard from a teacher earlier, 4 or 5 hours a day on Zoom with the students to be able to do that, that is going to be a shift. And so there's a lot gained by being able to be in person. There's a lot with the relationships, the motivation, getting back, moving ourselves back to where we came from. But at the same time, it would be a disservice to say that nothing's going to change or that the service for the students who remain on distance learning would be exactly the same. Just like we had to get better at distance learning at the beginning of the year, there will be growth and there will be frustration going through with this. In educational services, we will do our very best to offer trainings and ways to streamline, because on top of the apps and the technology and the engagement, part of what we need to do is work on getting the instructional day of the teacher back within a range that's healthy, because if teachers aren't well, coming into class with students who are maybe having the same emotional struggles at home is going to make for a difficult environment. So we need to make sure that we're doing things to support streamlining what we're doing, but that acknowledging that there are going to be some changes to what goes on in the home when we move back into blended learning.
Thank you. The on page 34, page 34, there's a couple more additions in terms of what happens if there's a failed screener. And actually, and that refers to page 69. So there's the person gets the card and direction of what to do to seek medical attention and to go through the protocol to check with their physician and determine whether to get tested and to watch their symptoms and direction of what to do in that circumstance. Also on 34 is again referring to the example of how directors and principals and school administration contact traces and communicates that tracing at the site and district wide. And then also in 34, the attachment that Director Guth shared regarding the testing sites that people will be referred to see. So, and then at the end, we're finalizing the document that's not in the plan yet. But again, Director Critchfield is going to share. This is an enrollment form that we're working to finalize, and including the directions for discussion tonight with the board regarding the options that parents would have coming to school and the committee.
Okay, thank you. So this is the agreement that parents will be signing when they determine what learning model they want, since it's either online or distance learning or blended, also known as hybrid. Those are our two options right now. They'll choose one and they'll be committed for at least a semester at a time. The purpose for that is we want to make sure that we don't have more students in a classroom doing hybrid than what's allowed. We want to make sure the classrooms are small, that there's plenty of room to social distance. So I know there was a concern with the teacher saying, I have 30 students, you know, that's 16, you know, or 15, if we divide that in half, math problem there, we want it, that won't happen. If the classroom can only hold 14 safely, then that's what we'll do. So that the parents will choose hybrid or blended. If that's what they choose for their children, they have to understand that there's going to be some safety requirements and procedures in place, and that includes wearing a facial covering. So we understand with the little ones that they're going to need some practice in doing that, you know, but I've seen little kids wear face masks, 3 and 4 and 5 year olds, in Walmart and different places where they have them on. So we're going to be teaching those safety protocols and making sure kids have masks and are wearing them. Just, one of the things on the agreement is that if parents or students are just refusing to abide by the safety procedures that we have in place to keep all students and staff safe, then they may be moved to a different learning model, like back to distance learning, until they can get comfortable with the procedures in place. So this is just kind of agreement the parent understands when we go into blended. If there is a positive case and a student is a direct contact and they have to quarantine for 14 days, that they would continue on distance learning. And that's also the nice part about teachers being able to do distance learning with hybrid or blended, I should say, is that there isn't any learning loss, because that's what really this is about. The teachers have done an amazing job with distance learning, given what they've been given, and the students have done a great job connecting and trying to learn, but it really is all about that learning. And so if kids are home because they have a runny nose and they can't pass screening, we want to make sure they're still getting their education and they're still learning, so that gap doesn't widen. So this is just this is a rough draft. We'll be getting it out to the school sites to look at it. But definitely it is an agreement from the parent that you're going to abide by our safety protocols that their students are, the expectations of going to blended learning, so that we can keep all students and staff safe. And we want them at school, but we want them to be safe as well. So that's all I have. I love these pictures, by the way. This is a couple of our teachers and doing some online distance learning with the students. So.
Thank you. So the purpose of bringing this up and reviewing these items is to show the update to the current plan, and also to demonstrate that it's a working document and that we'll continue to work and add as public health guidance evolves, and also stakeholder input, as well as practice. And so we'll continue that as we journey our way into the next chapter of this COVID experience, and usher in from the purple stage to the red stage. So also a purpose here is to bring to the conscious level all the different pieces, all the sort of game pieces for having a larger discussion about, reopening in a blended model. And so what we're asking tonight is for the board to approve the plan, so that it's no longer a proposed plan. It is our working plan that's subject to revision as we move along and as we've done over the past few months. That there's also, it makes fertile ground for questions.
Now, I would like to say thank you, Mr. Cena, and all the folks that have helped work on this and presented it. As you said, the one we're looking at right now is the 6th revision of this particular plan, and it sounds to me like that's one of the nice things about it. It needs to be very fluid for change when we need change. Is there any comments from board members or questions?
I have a question. This is Jim.
Yeah, go ahead.
One from Mr. Barnett. On the maintenance, we used to have a work schedule for the maintenance, the custodial workers, to make sure they were getting their work done. With this extra work, has that been figured in, that schedule, how to adjust that? Are they going to need more custodians to meet all this workload, because it's going to be increased work from what they were doing before. And then also, second, I want to know, are any of our custodians splitting two schools, having to go from one to the other?
Currently, Mr. Fleury, we are looking, we're working with personnel to see if we can get some more help through the custodial services. Right now, it's been pretty difficult to staff during these times, but we're still working on it. And as far as to answer the second part of your question, where we're moving custodians to split at two sites, we have been known to do that when we're running short at one site and we can't find subs. So we are working with personnel services to get our sub pool up, and we are working with Ms. Lossing as well to look and look at those deficiencies if there are some. Right now, current workloads, our custodial staff are keeping up, but it definitely, you know, it always helps. Every bit helps to see if we can get more staffing on board.
Well, we always have to watch when we put more on people's plate. We have to always be aware of that. That was my concern.
Absolutely.
Okay, so, I have a question. A couple questions. Three questions, actually. You know, the other day I had a parent call me and was pretty upset, saying, I want my kid to go to school, and expletive. But I don't want him wearing a mask. And Jolie did address this a little bit, and I'm a little bit concerned about what we're going to do with these kids whose parents have taught them to not conform to the rules that we'd like to give them. And I know, having taught, you know, for like three decades, I understand, you know, we have kids like that. Another question I have is, I'm still confused about what the teacher's workload's going to be. You know, our teachers are already working their tails off when we go into the hybrid model. You know, I get this, maybe, I don't know if I'm right or wrong, I keep getting this vision that the teachers are going to be doing double work. And I really think that either we need to have more staff, or you need to at least clarify that for me. And the last thing is, and there's actually a lot more questions, but I just want to limit to this. Like these protocols that we have for bringing kids in. Dr. Fossey and also Dr. Bricks the other day were talking about, you know, these same standards, you know, letting kids into the schools. And these are great protocols. I mean, they're all over the nation. But they also said that, you know, what are we going to – they also mentioned that there's kids that are asymptomatic, that, you know, they are carriers and they are, you know, going to be infecting others. And they aren't going to be showing any symptoms. And the only way to really know is to test. Okay, testing. Well, testing is expensive, and testing takes a while. And what we really need, and we haven't gotten there, is some kind of instant test that goes and looks for the, you know, finds the antigens and right away. And then even at that, if I was tested in the morning and I was negative, I could still have it and not show, you know, for hours and later, and still be contagious. Now, I really appreciate everything that you've done. I think you guys have worked your tails off doing this, and I appreciate that, and I understand. But I just want you to know my questions. My most important thing here is, I want everyone safe. I don't want some kid going home and infecting his whole family, you know. And a few weeks ago, I happened to be talking about a friend of my nephew's whose child was in the hospital for 6 weeks with COVID, third grader, 9 years old. Was it 9 years old, third grade? And that child survived, but has, you know, all kinds of problems now. That, you know, breathing problems more than anything.
That you're breathing.
So anyways, that's all I wanted to bring up.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and answer the first question since it was directed to me.
Well, you've already answered.
Oh, okay. Because it is an expectation.
And I said that too.
Okay. Okay.
But these are just all questions that I have. I mean, about this, and there's plenty more, but I think that's enough for now.
It's an evolving process, but one thing in mind is that the guidelines are put in place to prevent and to slow.
I understand.
We can't guarantee, but we do the best we can based on the guidelines and you know.
You know, Gary, I understand that. I think you're between a rock and a hard spot here. But I'm just, you know, I know that I have parents telling me all kinds of different things and telling me their needs. And basically, I'm just expressing one of the strongest worries that was put to me this week, you know, in a very emphatic way. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Other board members, do we have questions or comments?
Yeah, Randy, this is Jeff. I got a couple of questions. First one would be, you know, kind of dovetailing on what Mr. Fleury said. Seems like there's going to have to be a lot of oversight from maintenance and custodial. Travis talked a little bit about custodial. We didn't talk anything about maintenance, but it seems to me that we need more people. And one of my questions would be, does the CARES Act pay for that? Can we use any of that money for that? And then my second question to that part would be, has Travis asked for more staff? Because once we open schools, there's no way that the maintenance and custodials are going to be able to keep up with this stuff. And then I have a couple other questions after that.
Well, I can answer. Currently, we hold our shop meetings weekly. We've talked with maintenance staff. Right now, they feel confident they can keep up with the needs. Obviously, with a hybrid model, they're in and out. They're working on plexiglass. Also, when it comes to the custodial staff, maintenance staff has also been brought in and been trained for disinfecting. So in the event that we are falling short behind, maintenance staff will help custodial back up at site. So we have been kind of discussing these things about, you know, we're all in this together. It's a buildings and grounds department. It's maintenance, custodians, grounds. We're all in it. In the event that anybody needs backing, we're here to separate and divide and conquer, so to speak. So nobody's really being left out. It's not one of those scenarios where we say it's only custodian and it falls on custodian or only falls on maintenance and that's it. In our department, we have all, you know, had these meetings, discuss what it's going to take and what it looks like. In the event that students return and we start seeing a deficiency or anything like that, I think that's something we'd have to revisit. Currently, though, we're not really feeling a lot of stress at this point as we've kind of delegated these working, you know, working together. So, you know, some people working on plexiglass while custodians are out shutting down drinking fountains. I mean, we're really all in it together. So as far as looking at everything as being, you know, separated in different departments, we're really one. And as far as being able to fund with the CARES Act, I think that would be something that Ms. Loxing or Mr. Carrion could speak to.
I can speak to that. Yes, our CARES Act funds, the majority of them are to be expended by December 30th of this year. But then there's a substantial amount that we have until September of 2022 to expend. So we could hire additional custodial or maintenance with that money, realizing that once the funding deadline occurs, we would have to sustain that with other funds or else in the positions at that time. So we just have to make plans for that.
Yeah, thanks for that. But I can't see how custodial and maintenance can keep up once we put kids back in school. I mean, you've got kids going to the restroom and stuff having to be cleaned constantly. To me, it's unfathomable that we wouldn't at least start getting a plan in order to hire more staff to make, you know, the other staff feel comfortable and the kids feel comfortable. I mean, it seems like to me there's just no way along with their normal duties that they're going to be able to do all this. That's just my opinion. And I know that, you know, none of us have asked for this. None of us asked for the coronavirus. And it's a very difficult situation. But of all the departments that are really going to need help, along with the teachers, the custodians and the maintenance are going to need help keeping up.
It's a good point, Jeff. Thank you. I couldn't agree more now that you got me thinking about it, especially custodial. Yeah. That's or maintenance. That's that's a workload, especially if you're going to have to every time a kid goes to the bathroom, you're going to have to clean it up totally. Who's going to do that? Who can do that? And a teacher can't leave 15 kids in the classroom. So, yeah, you probably talked about 5, 6, 10. I don't know.
I have a question, please. I'd like to ask a question.
Go ahead, Scott.
You know, I'm just trying to find out how many nurses we have in our school district and what part will they play in trying to help with kids that are getting sick on our campuses and at our different schools. What are we doing with our school nurses?
I can answer that.
Thank you.
So right now our school nurses are assisting with preparing families in the event we return to school. And so ensuring those students who have maybe like a compromised immune system or need a specific healthcare plan, that arrangements are made to ensure their safety and planning those out. They also assist with various things, but our health aides are assisting with the screening process at the front of the school. They will also provide direct care to our students who come back who may have like type 1 diabetes or other healthcare needs. And then we are working on training them to help facilitate parents accessing resources and communicating all of those things. So they're an extra body at the sites in addition to supporting students and families access to resources.
Okay. Thank you.
So I have one comment kind of back with regards to Jeff's question about adding, you know, extra service, cleaning service. And I think one of our issues, if we do hire people, then do we have ongoing costs? But I wonder if we could look into some type of cleaning service that we could contract for utilizing CARES funds that would be maybe just through the end of the year. Maybe we can contract with some type of company that we would have one extra person at each one of the sites to do this extra help. Maybe a talk.
I mean, I can kind of speak on behalf of that to some degree. I think if we're looking at contracting out positions, I think it might get into a union type of negotiation type of thing. So we've got to kind of be careful with that. I know Mr. Carrion, it's probably more in his wheelhouse, but I think we try to kind of avoid, so to speak, contracting out for those type of things.
How's that supposed to know?
I think if I may chime in here, to be considered our various service level layers that we may want to consider, which may include creating positions that aren't full-fledged custodial maintenance, but maybe other positions that provide sanitizing or cleansing of doorknobs and windows and bathroom fixtures and things that the custodian may not be able to get to on a regular basis. There are also opportunities for short-term employment, not temporary employment. There's not temporary positions available through the classified service, but there are short-term employment situations that are not to exceed 75 days. But more importantly, in considering any avenue for stretching CARES dollars or considering other uses of budget to extend the life of those positions, we could create part-time positions and or ultimately as the service level diminishes, then there's always that option of reducing positions at the end of a year or once we get past this pandemic phase, hoping that would happen at some point within the next couple of years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bowe, did you say you had some other questions also?
Yeah, thanks, Randy. This next question is really on behalf of a parent, and they talked about videoing classroom lessons, and they wanted to know, how do you video classroom lessons and guarantee that their child is not in the video? I don't know that, you know, how we do something like that, but they were concerned that there would be, you know, children in the video being videoed.
And I can speak to that one for you, Jeff. So no, we definitely wouldn't want to be broadcasting our students out just because this whole digital world, we're trying to monitor it, but there obviously be risks there. The way it would work is kind of like as teachers are filming their lessons now. So using a dot camera or something to be able to film what they're doing with their hands or on the board. So the camera would be directed up towards the teacher, towards the board, or using the dot camera down to where they'd be showing on the screen there and then recording to send home what's going on in the classroom. So the students, as you can imagine, this are going to be distanced and they're going to be in the room 6 feet away from the teacher. So there should be a good buffer. The camera is, again, facing the direction of the teacher, and it would be recording either the teacher at the board if they're teaching with a wireless mic, or if they're sitting and they're showing something visually, it would happen on the document camera, and you'd be recording using Screencastify or one of the other apps, just what the teacher is doing with their hands and then their voice.
Thanks, Rocco. And then, Randy, my last question is, will there have to be changes to this plan based on the MOU with MUTA? If, you know, when once and when we come up with a safety MOU with MUTA, will there be have to be changes to this plan?
That would be like a stakeholder. Yes, it would flow based on as we change. If there's something in there that is changed, then that would be documented because this would be our guide, you know, our reference for all stakeholders. So those items would be incorporated.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Now, if I may really quickly, Paul had asked a question earlier and I do want to make sure that it is addressed, and that was as far as teacher workload. I want to make sure that before voting does happen or more discussion that teachers aren't overlooked or feeling that your answer is not being, or your question's not being answered. It's something that I lose a lot of sleep over as we move forward as someone who started the year as a teacher working endless hours. And I know there are a lot of teachers here right now. Thank you for being here and being interested and invested. I know that it affects your life now more than it does for me, and that's very odd. But I know from doing this that it can be done. I know that there is definitely, it would be naive to say there's not going to be an increase in workload as we move forward. There are a lot of strategies that we can use to simplify. There are a lot of ways that as teachers, we can differentiate instruction with the same core components for what we're doing. Good teaching strategies that we all know, we're gonna just be forced to use a little bit differently to be able to deliver it through technology as opposed to in the classroom with the learners are there. So it is going to be different. It is going to be more time, but it does get easier. As somebody who did it and worked on it, whether you have a classroom of 30 kids that are showing up every day right now, and I would guess that very few teachers right now have all of their kids that are showing up to their Zooms and their meetings. They're already doing differentiation. They're already reaching out to those distance learners who aren't in the classroom every day and doing a lot to help those teachers. So I just want you to know, to answer your question, yes, it will be more work, but I do believe that it will get better. And I know that I will support, and I'm really trying to build a culture of sharing within the district where teachers will support each other. And hopefully through that, we're all going to grow and be able to get past the initial burden and come out stronger on the other side.
Thank you very much. Do we have any other questions?
Randy, can I ask who that was speaking?
That was...
Sorry, I'm on conference call, so I can't see a screen, sorry.
That was Mrs. Wright.
Who was
that? Okay, thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comments from board members?
I've got another question, Randy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Some of the teachers have young kids at home, and now we've got a problem with childcare when they're trying to teach if they go back. I understand there was a grant they were trying to get through the county to help the teachers that have childcare. I would like to know where we're at on that grant now.
And that relates to Trustee Boone's
question about CARES money. And the CARES money is really designed to help, you know, whatever it takes to help provide distance learning, you know, and prevent the same core goals that we have collectively. Speaking to that, there's a good example that working with the county on childcare, realizing that that's a real concern for teachers and for all educators. And so early on in the process was with distance learning, we wanted teachers to be able to focus on distance learning. And something that is first level, survival level, is what do I do with my kid? And that's why in the distance learning MOU, it has the not only the parents, I'm sorry, the teachers can work from home, but also that the teachers have the option of signing a waiver and bringing students in. So that's a way to address the current instructional program. As we move to blended learning, as soon as we start bringing other students in cohorts, that model could still work on Mondays, but Tuesday through Friday, you're right, it becomes a concern. And with that, it's something that there is money, because we can use CARES money for that. It's a system for having, childcare that's, childcare have regulated systems and protocols and things themselves and train personnel in the way that is to right. So saying that we recognize that's a challenge and that's an issue, and looking, like for instance, finding out what the need is, and then also working with providers and services to try to help access. So what's fair there is just saying that we're open to any idea. We're looking for ideas. We realize that's a major concern, and it's one of many. So to answer your question specifically, we asked the survey on Friday, and then that information was to be concluded yesterday, and that information is being compiled and will be shared with us soon. And we'll take it step by step, like so many thousand pieces of this whole enterprise. But we want to help provide that service. But it competes with students and families and that need for in-person instruction. So we'll continue to work on all of it.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Gary, Frank Crawford, before we all, adjourn eventually, I just want to be on record as saying, if any teacher is really afraid to go back into the classroom at this time, I don't want us or the district to force them back in. I really don't. If they have a real fear for it, we have to respect that. And, I know it. There's a lot of semantics to that, but I just want to be on record saying that, I can understand the real fears, whether they're with themselves or with their grandparents at home or with their children. So let's keep that factor alive and discuss it, please. That's all.
Thank you. Any other comments regarding our board agenda item?
Mr. Rasmussen, am I allowed to ask a couple of questions as well?
Sure.
I had a few, and I've been trying to take notes as to who these questions are supposed to go to, so if the names that I have associated with are incorrect, my apologies. But I believe it was either Travis or Brian, they were talking about the replacement of the bringing in of the MERV filters and putting those in. And I believe I heard something about where applicable or where practicable. And so is either the teachers union or the individual teachers that, where that's not practicable, are they going to be notified that they don't have those MERV filters so that we know that?
I can speak on behalf of that. So the CDC and ASHRAE standards don't mandate that a MERV filter is necessary. It just tries to, you know, it's basically an added precaution.
Right.
Some units can take them, some can't. I think that upon request, we could probably provide that information as we're going through the district and finding out. Technically, every single HVAC unit can handle a MERV 13 filter. However, with the age of our HVAC units, a MERV filter is extremely restricting for airflow. So if we do that, we run the risk of burning up these HVAC units. So we are changing them district wide, and we're kind of doing it on a trial basis. If we start seeing malfunctioning units, then we have to basically come in and put the MERV 12s back in, kind of take it back a notch. But I think in that event that we'd probably notify a teacher if we wanted to be, you know, we're all about transparency here and letting them know, hey, we've tried this, but unfortunately mechanically it doesn't work here. But I just want to go state for the record that it is not mandated. It's just an added layer that we're trying to offer our students and staff at this point. But I think, yeah, you're right. I think at that point, if it's not mechanically feasible, that we would just say, hey, you know, we've tried, we're doing everything we can, and maybe we come up with another solution. We are looking at different avenues as well. You know, there's different technologies out there right now that we're looking into, such as ionization motors that go inside HVAC units. So we're working out different things like that right now throughout the district, that could also be a viable solution to install these in different HVAC units throughout the district. So as we move forward and mechanically we're kind of working out the bugs of where it's applicable and where it's not, I think we'll be able to update staff through, you know, our senior leadership here, and we can get those messages out.
Got it. Because that's what I knew that I had heard that restrictive, so.
Angela,
units are older.
Can I interrupt you just for a minute, Angela?
Sure.
So when you asked that question, I was looking at Mr. Carrigan for help, and he gave me the nod. But I was kind of curious, you know, this isn't a public comment section. So is it really appropriate to have public comments or questions during this time, Mr.
They can speak to any item. Anybody can speak to any item that's agendized.
Even without having a public comment. Thanks. So go ahead, Angela.
Thanks. Also, I had a question because we haven't seen the parent registration form yet, and I think Mr. Cena was talking about it's going to be coming out soon. But when it was mentioned, I thought I had heard, and so I wanted to receive some clarification that, hi, Jolie, that if a student, I thought I heard something along the lines of if a student is unable to consistently wear their mask, if we have a big problem going on there, that the student, was it either could or would be placed on distance learning? And so that's where I said a clarification question.
Right. They would be placed on distance learning at that time. So the understanding is when parents choose blended learning, they're choosing this knowing that we have safety procedures and protocols in place. So that's part of the signature on that. It's been a work in progress as things change with the waiver, but those are the expectations when we go back to blended learning.
Is that true of TK through second as well?
We included them in this as an expectation.
Gotcha.
Okay. There's going to be a lot of learning on that, a lot of learning curve for the little guys, but our expectation is that they have a mask as well, correct, Mr. Cena?
Right, that's quite a bit different than what we were just told at the bargaining table the last couple of sessions, so that's why I'm just really surprised actually to hear that, because that's really, actually it's totally counter to what the district's lawyer has said to us, so that's why I was just really surprised.
Well, with the younger the kids, everybody's expected to wear a facial covering, and everybody's encouraged and coached. The difference between third grade and up, those students will be excluded as per the California Department of Health guidelines from in-class learning,
right.
Not disciplined, but excluded. Now the younger kids, the second graders and younger, again, it's just continuing to coach them and encourage them and understand that developmentally, they may not wear a mask
appropriately or have it on for the whole time. That's all per the guidelines. So that's what is represented in the waiver. The key thing in the waiver is that parents understand that students are going to be required to wear masks.
So then, Mr. Cena, I'm kind of confused then. So for TK through second, if the students, for whatever reason, and I know that there could be any myriad, there could be a lot of reasons, but if TK through second, if they're not able to consistently wear their masks, are they going to be placed on distance learning or are they not? I'm kind of confused.
No, the youngest kids won't, but the kids third grade up will be excluded as per the guidelines.
I also had a few questions that I'm going to try to roll into one, but there have been at least, I think we heard 6 different revisions of the reopening plan, and in some way, shape, or form, Yuta has seen all 6 of them, but even clear back to the first draft, we had noted some contradictory information in regards to the serving of meals and cafeterias. And so we had asked about it clear back in July, and every revision that comes out, we still have some of that contradictory information. And so we still have teachers trying to figure out exactly what the plan is in regards to meals. Because just if you go from page 9 to page 11 to page 16 to page 26, we have 4 different pieces of info in regards to that. And so when we're dealing with teachers trying to figure out what their day is going to look like and what the expectations are of them, it would really be helpful to know which page number we're supposed to be referring to for the correct and accurate information on that. So do we know which one we should go with?
Yeah, I can speak to this section, and I don't have I didn't jot down all the different page numbers, so I'll try to answer all your questions. I think the big takeaway is that lunch is not going to be consumed on site, and the students will be served at dismissal time their lunch, and there's varying times for the dismissal time based on grade level. And we are looking at accommodating, either in my department or through a partnership with support service staff at school sites, to meet the dismissal times between TK to 12th grade when we're back for all grade levels.
So then, Amber, one of the things, in the hopes that maybe this will help for what I'm sure may be a 7th or 8th revision. So page 16 and page 26 are going to be the 2 pages that teachers have referred back to a whole lot, because we've heard quite frequently that what you were just recounting is how the meal distribution is going to work. But then on page 16 and page 26, there's information on those pages that contradict that. And so if that's helpful at all as we get into other revisions, because I know I rattled off those page numbers kind of quickly, so if that helps.
I think maybe Rocco might be able to weigh in on those latter pages as well.
Yeah, because on page 16 it says that meals are going to be served in classrooms or outdoors, and then on page 26 it says they're going to be served grab and go when the students arrive on campus, and then the students are going to proceed to their teacher's designated area. And so that's why there's just a lot of questions. So that may be something we can fix in revision number 7 or 8. You're welcome.
Hey, Angela. Looking at the document, it looks like that would be a contradiction. The kids will not be eating on campus. I think initially we were looking at ways to be able to keep them on. The idea of, and I think some of the board members had brought it up earlier, the load on custodians and cleaning just to keep the sanitation, trying to have teachers and custodians then also trying to clean up mealtime stuff. And then also looking at the fact that you will still have curbside distance learning and you'd have to split your nutritional staff to be able to serve on and off campus. So what it was changed to would be that the grab and go bag is done. So they'll be serving the 4 meals. The kid will get that meal. And what it is, let's say they were taking it on a Wednesday, it would have Thursday's breakfast in with it, and they would be expected to eat breakfast at home. So it sounds like there needs to be a correction to the plan, if that's still in there, because they will not be eating on campus.
Okay. Gotcha.
Thanks.
And we've had teachers ask about equipment for technology. And so I know there's been talk as far as, you know, Alicia and Rocco both were talking a lot about some of these changes and such. And so I'm not sure exactly what site budgets and all look like, but do we know if there's anything within, I know we've got CARES Act money, but also within district budgets to provide that so that we're not totally depleting site budgets because we've got teachers that don't have wireless mics and we've got teachers that may have to completely relocate all the technology in their room because their document camera isn't at the front of the room. So do we know anything on that? Because like the last thing we want to do is completely run our site budgets into the ground. So
yeah, and I can speak and I'm sure there's other people that could as well. Right now what's happening is anything that's coming in is related to technology costs, cleaning costs, sanitization. As they're coming in, if for some reason a principal or site administrator had coded it as a site budget, it's being recoded to CARES Act. And then through LCAP, that's either running through Jen or I for final approval to come back through. So any technology costs, like we had some sites that got going early and they knew, you know, we predicted this was coming. They started ordering technology pieces and all of that has been journaled back. Brian, did you have something you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, when it comes to the wireless mic, and I'm hoping you can hear me, I'm quite a ways away from the phone, but we're looking to do that at a district level. The issue that we're running into is trying to find 450 to 500 of them all at once is a challenge. So that'll be in different places, but that would be done, again, as Dr. Greco mentioned, that would be transferred out of CARES dollars to come in. But wireless mics is one of the very first things we talked about needing when we started this conversation about what it may look like in the blended model.
And one other thing there, Angela, if there are teachers who are having, and for anyone out there listening, if there's teachers who are seeing, you know what, I need a restructuring based on the idea that this is coming, I could do my distance learning teaching from this part of the room, and I need to have a dot camera moved or those pieces moved. If they were to send in something to technology to let us know, either one of the site techs or one of us will get out to make sure the cameras are where they need to be for them to be able to move forward with that.
Gotcha.
That's a good deal.
I didn't know if Angela, since Angela, I know she's our MUTA president, since she was able to ask a question, is that open? Because I had one directly about that mask question, a clarifying question, of course. I understand if I can't, but I thought I'd ask.
I'll let her ask. Go ahead.
Am I? All right. So we heard from Jolie that all students would be required to wear masks. And of course, we would train. I teach first grade. It's going to take a lot of training. I know that. I am totally okay with giving them breaks, understanding if they have difficulty, but then it sounds from Mr. Cena that if a student refuses to, or a parent tells their child you're not to wear your mask, or you don't have to wear your mask, and it becomes an ongoing issue, that then I just have to have that student in my class without a mask, even if that's the understanding of what is required. So that's kind of the question I have is, if we coach them and there's been contact with parents like, hey, this is something that needs to be done, and they still refuse, what's our recourse then? Do I just put him in furthest away from me in the back of the room and keep on teaching? Or, you know, how are we going to handle that?
It's a good question. I have a four-year-old grandson, and I agree with you. I was trying to think that through myself.
Yeah.
It is a dilemma.
I will say in other programs right now, some of the schools that are opening up and talking, you know, with a lot of PBIS rewards and all of those type of things, kids are wearing their masks and they're doing a really good job on that. So it's the expectation they come to school and they follow our safety procedures. I think where we're getting kind of that line is the state has come out saying that we can't, that they're not required. And that's one of the things that's kind of that, oh, what do we do? But for our safety procedures, we are requiring it. So it is going to be a conversation with the parents that there's another program that they need to probably be in, and that's distance learning, because we need to make sure everybody's safe. So I know we look at these little kids and say, no way. Every kid that I've met, they've been wearing their masks, and it is going to be a lot of coaching, and you guys are going to have to do this, but it's cool. They don't want to be ones without the mask, really, and we can make them really cute. And I think a case-by-case situation, if a kid's just flat out not refusing to wear it, and then we're just going to be a meeting with the parent on what to do, and we'll take it case-by-case. But I think that's where the issue lies is with the state coming out saying, you know, it's not really a requirement. It's required for third grade up. But our agreement says that if you're going to choose hybrid blended learning, we expect the students to wear masks.
Right. We expect students to wear masks. And the students that are third grade and up, we will exclude them from learning because that is the guidance. Grade second and below, the guidance is that they're encouraged. And I understand, and even developmentally, you know, that they don't have it or that they, you know, can't wear them appropriately or, you know, but they're encouraged. And so back to, in this landscape that we're in right now, where there's so many divergent points of view and opinions and reads and personal feelings and personal perspectives on things, that using guidelines and sticking to them is how we hold we hold ourselves accountable. We hold other people. So we have a shared set of guidelines that we're going by. And, you know, I understand there's different views of science and that type of thing. But part of what we're talking about is that we're using the California Department of Public Health guidelines. And, you know, it's not only founded on the development, the level of a student that age, but also the concept of the COVID virus and how it transfers, the number of ACE receptors in the bodies of people a certain age. And I understand there's science, but there's articles and there's thought that contradict that. But what we're doing is we're establishing that this, when they change it, we'll change it. Until then, that's what we live, you know, because we're going to be working with people that have different views and different perspectives. And so what do we use as our guide? And that's where that practice applies.
So the only other thing that I have right at the moment is actually, I don't know that Mr. Crawford put it out there as a question. It was more of a statement. But Mr. Crawford, you had said something about, and I don't want to misquote you, but you had said
that's
something.
That's all right.
About if there was a teacher who, you know, wasn't comfortable coming in to teach because of COVID, because of either their own health or their family or loved one that lives with them, that they shouldn't be forced to do so. Am I close to man the ballpark at least?
Like no, you said it better than I did. You really did. So don't. I really feel that way. I just wanted to be on record before we shut things down. I didn't know when we were that. Hey, you know, and I really feel strongly about that. I don't know how the rest of my fellow board members do, but that's how I feel.
And I'm not sure how the board members feel either, but I will tell you that teachers aren't exactly getting that sentiment. Because unfortunately the district is having their lawyer utilize one of the oldest tactics in the book. And so the accommodations interviews that are happening, the district's lawyer is at all of those. And so I'm being contacted by teachers who are not tenured, telling me that maybe they shouldn't pursue their accommodations because of that. And I have teachers even who are tenured who are saying, well, you know, is this going to be something that comes back to haunt me if I try to pursue these accommodations? Because why am I dealing with a lawyer? And some of these, it's actually a lot of them right now, it is just the lawyer. And so that's a tactic that's used by workers' comp, Social Security, those types of things to intimidate people and scare them into not pursuing services that they're actually entitled to. And so I just think it's really sad that in a district where we have for a long time prided ourselves on being much more like family than anything else, that's what teachers are having to experience now because they're trying to get the accommodations that you were just referring to.
I'm glad you got a chance to let us all really know how you feel. And I large part of what you said, I agree with totally. And these are just strange times. 2020 is, you know, I know that's just a cliche anymore, but what else could happen? Maybe I shouldn't even say that. Yeah.
What we say anymore, not. We're like, do not ask that question.
Yes, you're right. But no, it was nice talking to you. It really was.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Mr. Rasmussen, that was the last of my questions. So unless,
yeah, sorry,
unless somebody wants to ask me something now, I've asked all these questions. I put myself out there. That.
Thank you very much, Angela. But I would like to bring up a point of order regarding our board policy 9323. And I want to read a couple of those sections because I don't want us to start setting a precedent here. And this is under public participation. In order to conduct district business in an orderly and efficient manner, the board requires that public presentations to the board comply with the following procedures. Number one, the board shall give members of the public an opportunity to address the board on any item of interest to the public that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board, either before or during the board's consideration of the item. Education Code 35145.5. Government Code 54954.3. There's actually seven items that fall under that category. And number five of that category says, the person wishing to be heard by the board shall first be recognized by the president and shall then proceed to comment as briefly as the subject permits. Individual speakers shall be allowed 3 minutes to address the board on each agenda or non-agenda item. The board shall limit the total time for public input on each item to 20 minutes. So I really think from a president's standpoint, we certainly can make these accommodations to speak, but we do need to follow by the rules that we're being governed by. So from now on, we will allow the public to talk, but it will be for each individual for 3 minutes and a total of 20 minutes on that subject matter. Thank you. Are there any other comments regarding our agenda item? Not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
With a strong recommendation for additional services for disinfecting, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Moe. Noted. Trustee Allison.
No.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes, and I would like to put on the same recommendation that Jeff did.
Okay. Trustee Scott. Trustee Scott. What's your vote?
Turn on your mic, Susan.
She may have fallen asleep.
Jimmy.
That's a yes, with that same recommendation, please.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen. Motion carries 6-1. The no vote is Mr. Allison. Student Service Bid Number 2, 2020-21, MJUS Proposed Pandemic School Reopening Plan Update. The purpose of the agenda item is the board to discuss potential options for reopening schools. This is an informational and discussion item. So, Mr. Cena?
Yes. So with all this discussion tonight and all this input from various perspectives, as well as information that all board members and everyone participating tonight has received and given over the past several weeks and months, we've talked about that Hickory County now is going from the most restrictive COVID-19 phase, the purple phase, to the red phase, and that we'll exit the watch list on Tuesday of next week, which then create the opportunity for school-wide in-person instruction at K, pre-K all the way up to 12th grade. So it's looking at or discussing options of how we would like to enter in-person instruction. I should say that first of all, the specialized populations and the cohorts, that's something that we are to be working on, continue to work on and work with at all grade levels, you know, from that we've been working on and that we continue to work and provide those services. And it, in terms of in-person school-wide instruction, again, the guidance from the health officials is just because, you know, in Yuba County that schools can be open for blended learning on Wednesday the 21st doesn't mean they have to, and that what we're looking for is to be patient, measured, reliable, and prudent, and that to prevent the yo-yo effect. Moving forward, talking about options, what we've talked about in the past is start small, go slow, so we can grow. A model such as that would begin with the earliest grades. We've talked about that because the earliest grades are the grades that have the most need, the most immediate need for in-person instruction. They don't know how to read yet. They don't know how to use a Chromebook. They haven't developed the same types of relationships. And not only does it provide service to those students first, it also provides an opportunity that's come up in the discussion and the questions. It's like Trustee Boone's question about the disinfecting and the need for more maintenance or custodial staff. There are issues with the teachers are, you know, have a right to a duty-free lunch. So how do we, you know, who fills in for them and connects with students and provide support or for breaks or for, you know, in the event that someone is a direct contact and is out for 14 days. The reality of the needs are going to come when we practice, and that we don't know all that the answers to what kind of additional support we're going to need and where. The health and safety protocols, the screenings. There was talk about nurses and health aides. So we can project and we're moving forward with, you know, adding personnel in particular areas, but we don't know. So starting small and slow also affords the opportunity to see and build it with fidelity and make sure that we are providing the healthiest and safest environment for students and staff. And then add, you know, like a time relief capsule, add grade levels after that. Of course, there's other options, but, you know, there's other options to explore, but starting at a fundamental concept, that's something that we've thought about and that talked about and that is recommended by health guidance is that the time release capsule concept that's a proven approach. And there are other districts that are utilizing that approach. And then looking at a date, you know, a target date to start that process. And when would be the best time to provide that service so that we meet the needs of our families who are expressing a need for in-person instruction really as soon as possible. It couldn't happen soon enough. And then you know, the concerns that have been expressed tonight. So this is an opportunity to discuss that process and options.
So is there any comments from board members?
Yeah, Randy, this is Jeff. Hey, Gary, what would be your recommendation? What day to start for starters?
Well, if we say that model, sort of, for lack of a better term, and it's a better term, you know, referring to it as time release capsule, so to speak, or you know, sequential, is that, you know, looking at the circumstances, the 21st would be way too soon. And I'm using Tuesdays because part of the blended model that we have is designed to help make the transition seamless as we go from distance learning to blended learning to traditional, and if we have to go back. And so the schedule is the same. And on Mondays, as Coordinator Wright shared earlier tonight, Mondays are going to be time for teachers to build their videos and their lessons and their collaborative efforts for the week. So when I say Tuesday, that would be the first day of the cohort. Because looking at our model that was shared tonight, it's an AA. So Tuesday, Wednesday is cohort A, in-person instruction. Thursday, Friday is cohort B. So we could start the 21st. Seems like it's too soon. The 27th, what's that? It's 2 weeks. It's a sliding scale. It's how soon. How soon do we want to get back in, and are we ready or equipped to do so? The 27th also seems quick based on where we are as an entire organization. November 3rd becomes that gets in the
election
at the right time, and then November 10th. When you look at other models, you know, in Northern California, there's different in different counties. There's different examples, but some of the examples of districts that are our size that are getting out of the purple phase into the red phase. There are examples of starting that week of the Veterans Day. So November 10th would be the first day. That seems like the latest that we would, but it also seems like at the time for teachers to get prepared and feel confident about the strategies and the practices that were introduced tonight, and that October 19th that teachers have opportunity to learn and practice. So in that range, that's also about the latest. If you start the other part of the other sections, so if you start October 27th. That would allow the youngest kids to have 7 weeks of instruction before winter break. And then, you know, November 3rd would be 6 weeks, November 10th, 5 weeks, 17th, 4 weeks. The further you go back, the more, you know, original idea we were talking about that we'd add a grade level a week. The further we push it back, the more grade levels we would need to add, you know, in the ensuing weeks. So if you did start November 10th, that would give the youngest kids 5 weeks, and it would give, say, the second and third graders 4 weeks. Sorry. They give them 5 weeks, and then the second and third graders would have, well, they'd have 4, and then the fourth and fifth graders would have 3 before the semester. With an idea like that, secondary schools wouldn't start till January 4th. Given the circumstances, given what we've heard tonight, given the desire to start, given the need to exercise or implement and learn and strengthen and develop capacity to serve all students, amid one thing that wasn't brought up tonight is, you know, the transmission rate is really low right now, 4.7 per day. That's so that's what's telling us. It's telling us, hey, the transmission is real low, so this is the opportunity. And, you know, as expressed tonight, you know, this is the opportunity. So if you get in, get memories, get that connection, because we don't know what's going to happen to the window. But, you know, it's when we've learned that when you have positive cases and then you have direct contacts, when people are out 14 days for quarantine, you know, what does that throw into the system? So these are all lessons that people are going to learn as we open up. But it seems that if we did start that November 10th. There has been much talk about starting at the trimester, which does start at November 16th, which would be start 17th. I think there's real feeling to start before that, but not too soon. So the 10th seems like a time that's would be a realistic and a proper, prudent, patient, measured start.
Hey, Gary, can I just ask you one question? So what you're saying, if Yuba County fails the second week, we have to go back another 2 weeks? I'm not following you on that.
Yeah. Well, and they've already determined that. That's what they disclosed today. They can tell. So they can already tell. They're a week ahead. So Yuba County is going to be off the watch list, or is off the watch list. But for schools, we have to be off the watch list for 14 days. And it'll be
14 purple days. Is that how you term it?
No, 14 red days.
Oh, red days.
14 days in red.
I got
and we have to be under 100 cases over those 14 days. And
we do the whole thing again.
Yeah, that'd be 6 or 7 cases a day. And we're at 4, almost 5.
Yeah.
And they already know that next week, you know, so that's what we're saying, that Wednesday, the 21st, you know, it's that sliding scale. If we can't wait, you know, we want to go as soon as we can, then in Yuba County, the earliest you can do it is the 21st.
Gotcha.
But then it depends on the district and you know, stakeholders and what's prudent, what's patient.
Oh, yeah. So and, much. And comes,
that's,
yeah.
That's what we're discussing is, you know, when to do that. To,
sure.
What is the appropriate time?
Oh, yeah.
Can I just say this real quick? Right now, I feel like I'm on like reopening overload, and given the time and the quickness of everything trying to happen, and not giving the teachers enough time to make their preparation, you know, or to even think about what it's going to take to get this going again. But like, is there any way that we can come back on this on the 27th, or is that just like not going to work out for everybody? I mean, can we talk about it on the 27th so that we can hear, you know, from the teachers? Is that going to be enough time for them? Is that going to be enough time for the parents? And let's just sort of like try to put it back together again, you know, to try to do this in 2 weeks, and they're going to come back.
Tonight is about discussing options. So yeah, it's an informational discussion item, so that, you know, I think when they talk about prudent, rational, that it's what they're comfortable with, because the most comfortable and confident, the better chance of being successful and preventing the yo-yo effect. So there's kind of an opportunity to hear from board members or see what the views of the elephant are, which would help to set direction.
Even if we decided to try to do something like around the 10th of November, they're going to come back, they'll be there for that week or two, and then we're going to go down again for like about another week or two, because we're going to run into Thanksgiving. Then they're going to come back and they're going to be gone 2 more weeks, because we're going to go back, you know, going to Christmas. So it's just some things that we need to sort of consider, you know, to try to think about these families these are like major adjustments for everybody when it comes to them, you know, and they've been gone for a little while, and now we need to try to make it comfortable for them to enter back, as well as the teachers to try to give us the best that they can give us for something that's going to be new to everyone.
Mm-hmm. You're right, Susan. Yeah, but like I was telling you earlier with my granddaughter, it hasn't been an easy 3 weeks in Rockland, her going back to school. That's a whole strange thing, and it messes with, you know, 12-year-old girl's mind. It's,
yeah,
you know, from PE with a mask, everything. It's been crazy. So, yeah, there's no right answer.
We're going to be coming and going for a little bit, because we come, we get started, we leave for Thanksgiving. We come back.
Oh, yeah, and then Christmas, three weeks almost, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if we have like those type of things, and like, how is that going to work for the teachers? That's one thing that I really would like to try, because, you know, it's going to sort of be a little bit difficult for them to try to get these kids acclimated to, first of all, number one, coming back, and number two, telling them they're going to leave again, you know. Yeah. So
I agree.
Something for us to think about.
Sure.
There's value in those moments that students get to actually connect with their teacher in the classroom. You know, that there, as we've heard tonight, that students are, you know, it's a rough time. And so having that connection and starting any, there's value in any, you know, contact in any days that they're in person. And it's a start, you know, as a school-wide in-person instruction, it's been since March 13th. So wow. part of it is breaking the oxidation layer, and, you know, because we all live by routine, and there's real value in starting, you know, sooner. And I think there's real value in starting and having chances to implement it and learn, rather than just trying to start, say, K-12 at the same time.
I got a comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, I was thinking back to the comment that Inga made. These kids, how much have we communicated? It's going to be a paradigm shift. It is not beef school like they know it. And they get in there. How many are coming back? Is there anything on a survey that's going to measure? How many are going to come back, think it's going to be school as usual, and doesn't realize they're not going to be able to socialize as much with their friends? It's going to be a total paradigm shift from what they knew as a school. What have we done to communicate that to them and the parents? So Some of the parents I've talked to did not know that it's going to be this big of a shift.
Yeah, the and that's where earlier when we shared, you know, we had the brochure, we're working on other brochures, and we're working on a video to help educate families about the expectation. When we had the parent, but we said there were a thousand people that viewed the parent presentation on October 1st, you know, shared there the brutal facts of, you know, what are some of the circumstances in the enrollment form that Director Critchfield shared tonight. There's pieces in there that when a parent is choosing between blended and distance, that there's some items in there that help shape what this yeah. looks like. That's why having a target date also, because then all forces rally for that date. We've been each stage of this since March 11th. We've been trying to, you know, first it was in March and April, it was just getting distance learning started and oriented and going. And then it was, you know, looking at reopening in a variety of different ways. And again, the distance learning and the SB 98 and the, you know, the high standards for accountability, for attendance and engagement. And as we go through each piece, you know, it's been a giant learning curve and a giant, you know, trying to serve. And so now this is the new horizon. And so when we do have a target date, it does allow us to, that's part of it is the education piece. Another part is gathering this information through those enrollment forms. And then once we have the forms, then work in the data to figure out, okay, plan for that in each site. And then, you know, and now what we talk about, like tonight presenting, all this discussion about ingress and egress, all this talk about classroom spacing, all these different, these are groups of administrators and stakeholders working together, foreseeing what the issues are and working to come up with, you know, within the blended learning model. So all these pieces are being assembled and are being thought through. And I like to think that we're being, you know, we're being thoughtful and trying to work through them completely so that we can practice with fidelity.
There's so many elements, Gary. I would find it impossible. I give to you and your whole crew. It's amazing. I can't. Just talking tonight, 10 more things pop troubles I didn't even foresee. I learned that a sibling could sit beside on a bus. I mean, you know, a million questions. And you know, and it could change next week. And then you're gonna have to start all over again, aren't you? I mean, it could really change on a dime. It's
yeah, crazy. It's you know, if you look at the largest districts, I mean, not everywhere, but in a lot of places, they've done the calculus on all this. And we're looking at it and saying the goal in the beginning was in-person instruction, and it continues to be. That's the best method. That's where the relationship and the connection happens. So it is resource hungry to run a blended model.
Sure.
There are tons of details, but we have a team, and we have a district that's together serving every student every day in every way. So we're working to try to provide this service and do a quality.
I'm glad you are. I'm lost in the details. So yeah, I'm glad. Like I said, it's crazy.
Is it okay for me to add one thing, Superintendent Cena?
Yeah.
I think just one thing, I know this is a hard decision for everyone to make, but if we're going to push this decision back in any way, I think that being the person who goes through all of the survey data from teachers and parents and students and everybody else, they need to hear at least a couple of things tonight. One, if we're looking at November 10th or anything else, to actually hear October 20th is off the table because you have some people scrambling and concerned that they're going to be back in a classroom in a few days. So at least that. And then a second piece, giving at least an estimation of, we believe it's going to be around here so that people can start to plan. So we may shift a week or two around that 10th. But I think walking away from this very long meeting tonight with no real resolution as to when it looks like is going to be very difficult from people based on everything I've read and seen. So I just wanted to add that for you guys to consider.
That's a good point. And we won't do that to you. I hope not. No, we've talked enough, but yeah, expectations are October 20th. As a parent and a grandparent and my daughter, and you know all the family, you change dates on them, hey, that could make things worse, if that could possibly be. That could make things worse. So, yeah, I don't think we'll do that, Rocco.
So are you starting on the...
I thought it was October 27th.
The 27th.
Well, that's the.
I thought it was changed from the 20th to the 27th. Is that right?
Yeah, that was changed on the waiver application. Yes. And that's because one of the requirements in the waiver application is to have a target date. And so the target date for those applications were really to create the opportunity for the district to determine as soon as possible. So it was like picking the 21st because that would be the first day that we'd have the opportunity. So it allows the freedom for the district to choose, you know, whatever day they'd buy or prefer. Because of circumstances that submission was delayed, if the target date was the date was added to it. And that's where, like when I started off, I said October 27th, that would provide 7 weeks of instruction for this first group, and then, you know, succeeding weeks for the groups that follow.
Gary, if I can have some input, this is Jeff.
Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
November 10th is our break for the trimester for the young kids.
Yeah.
So the natural break to me would be November 10th. We would start, you know, there, the teachers would have a few days to kind of wade into this thing. And then for the high school kids, it seems to me because of credits and stuff, January 4th would make sense that they go back on January 4th. But, you know, that's my opinion, just by going with the natural breaks, and so it could flow for parents and stuff and the teachers.
If it's okay for me to contribute again, Jeff, schools I've been out to and the teachers I've talked to, that date of the trimester break continues to come up for elementary school as something that they're also very interested in, at least from what I've heard.
And this is Randy Davis, and I agree. That is what I have heard. They're worried that they're going to have to do the transitioning and their trimester all grouped together. So November 10th, to me, is a very good date. The challenge is that the 11th is a holiday. Can the district work through that holiday, or will we be celebrating Veterans Day?
I believe that we would, that's a federal holiday. So the 11th would be, what would happen there is Monday teachers would work, you know, on their lessons and their, have their social emotional check-in. Then on Tuesday would be cohort A. Wednesday would be Veterans Day, and then Thursday and Friday would be cohort B. So cohort A would get robbed of a day, but they would get the 31st day, and they would So it would still be a holiday on Wednesday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So again, just thinking back about our parent survey, and overwhelmingly, the parents were ready to send their kids back to school. And the other portion of that was overwhelmingly, they felt that schools are going to be safe. So it seems those are two factors. And tonight we overwhelmingly passed our pandemic plan and have our safety protocol in it. So it seems to me that the district is providing safety for our students and our teachers to go back to work. One thing that still is concerning to me is our curriculum delivery. And I think the November 10th date would certainly give our teachers time to hopefully learn our new system of trying to do that. I think that also give our educational services department a lot of time to help add support to that. So it seems to me that I do agree with November 10th for the elementary and then January 4th, as Mr. Boone predictor said, for our high school students, seems to make a lot of sense to me. Thank you. Any other comments?
Oh.
Just following up on what you just shared, the concern or the expressed concern of a board study session to hear or to understand what teachers are, the challenges that teachers are facing with distance learning and then with blended learning. That tonight, again, like given the hour and there seems to be a general consensus at this point about that idea of November 10th. And then succeeding grade levels and then starting secondary January 4th, that not tonight as an item, but if there was a study session and or some board meeting for addressing the topic of teacher challenge, as well as perhaps a vote on the plan and the date to provide the direction and the affirmation. Tonight, I think what Dr. Greco was getting at, I think just the general discussion or, where we're at is very helpful. But having an actual vote would probably be good. Now, having said that, it probably could wait till the 27th. Because we do have a 10-day under the MOU, carry on, 10 days. So the 27th, it could be on the 27th. So that's correct. It's whether the board would like to have a study session between now and the 27th for further discussion and vote on October 27th.
Now we've got a little feedback or something there.
Yeah. Are we done? Is there a motion?
No, there's only an informational item.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. You're right.
So I think
I'm down to 1%. I've actually used 100% of battery. Oh, yeah.
I was down to 1% too.
Yep.
One of the things that Mr. Keenan brought up, I don't know if other board members would be interested in trying to have some type of presentation, maybe by Ms. Wright, or on what our expectations are of teachers and how we're supporting them. I'm not sure if there's an interest.
We're going to have to do something because everybody's phone's dying and we're going to be off of here in a minute, you know, so. I think if we came back to another meeting and I had a little, because
to discuss it. I sort of agree with Rocco. We need to probably do something real quick, you know, but how soon can we get together on a decision with this?
I don't know.
Oh, is anybody unclear about the dates? I mean, anybody uncomfortable with the dates Rocco or and Gary want to go with? I have no problem with that.
I think it let me, this is Jim.
Yeah, I'm not uncomfortable with November 10th. But yeah. Would that be that TK1 starts November 10th and then the next week would start the second grade?
Yeah. Starting that late, we'd start that next week.
But thanks, Gary.
And then the high school kids, it's preschool, TK, and first grade would be that first grade.
Thank you.
High school,
January 2nd?
This is Paul. Yeah. This is Paul. If I may break in for just a moment, I hesitate to do so. But if this is to be a board decision and a board direction, it will need to be an agendized item and voted on formally.
Okay, right.
Whether that be by special meeting so that you can move the process forward, but I believe that in all fairness to the public, in this
good
case,
point. Thank you.
Thank you.
He's right. Jeez.
So what we're looking at is still giving direction to staff of what we feel the appropriate dates would be.
Yeah, and Paul, if I'm not mistaken, can we still take a consensus? But I don't think we need a consensus right now. But I know it's just directing to staff.
Yeah, no, you can certainly give the staff a sense of the board, you know, by the board's comments so that the staff can continue forward with planning. It would just be my recommendation if you're going to set those date certains that you can bring that back on an agenda and make it, and have a formal vote on it, as it will have some impacts that roll forward into other areas.
But we can take a consensus to say that would be our recommendation.
You're asking that the district bring back that as a formal motion so that you can take a vote on it. It's not final.
Okay. Okay, thanks, Paul.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay, so it looks like they would bring that back in on the 27th for our board meeting. And is there any interest in board members maybe about having some type of presentation with regards to curriculum delivery or no? Not hearing anybody, we won't worry about it. Okay, so is that item, are we paid for that item, Mr. Cena?
Yes, thank you for the direction. One thing, just for,
down to 1%.
Hurry.
Well, high school, yeah, okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gary.
No, I know people's, their machinery is wearing down. Go ahead.
Okay, so we do have a closing tonight by Mr. Fleury. Go ahead, Mr. Fleury.
Yes, I would like to close the board meeting tonight in memory of Cheryl Taylor. Cheryl worked at Ellis School and was at aid for 40 years. Her specialty was the reading. She loved to do the reading. And so I would like to close in her memory for her 40 years of service to our district. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fleury. Thank you all. Meeting adjourned.
Good job, Randy.
Thanks, Frank.
Bye, Randy.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody. All right.